Stupid, eh? Are you a stupid fool? Well, why can't you drive then? You can't even drive! Bit great today, isn't it?
I'm here! Hello, Pharaoh. Do you know, hello. I've always hated chipping us, especially in the morning. I remember when I was in Cub Scouts, the Cub Scout leader used to come through with a pot and a pan and a wooden spoon, and he'd be banging the pan. And he'd sing on the top of his voice, "What a beautiful morning," you know, out of tune to wake us all up. Oh, it was dreadful.
And that man was Nigel Farage. That's where he got his.
Anyway, how are you doing, Farah?
Yes, not too bad, thank you. Yes.
Yeah, and thank you very much for filling in here, because vaguely, Dee and I had plans of starting the Bowie thing today. But could either of us pull our fingers out? I mean,
I'm sure Dee is consulting the archives right now. He's such an in-depth archivist and researcher. He's like going back. He's doing interviews with people that Bowie knew. You know, that's the level of research you get with the Dee stream.
So. I mean, I will say we have. It's not that we've done no prep. Okay, for a start, my entire life, but also. I did send Dee a film from 1967 called The Image, which is one of the first Bowie's first film appearance, but I don't know anything about it. So I asked him, like, can you please find out something about this? Because that's the sort of thing up Dee Street, you know. But I want to make AA radio specials on Odyssey to help prep for the Bowie stuff. But I haven't had time, Pharaoh. I haven't had time.
It takes actually quite a lot of time and effort to Dee that kind of research, and people don't really appreciate how long it how long it takes. But the Bowie stuff reminds me of have you seen the new Sex Pistols documentary at all?
No, I haven't. No.
It's not a documentary. It's like a retelling of their lives. It's on Disney Plus. It's quite interesting, and again, just interesting seeing who are the kind of voices that want to, I guess, kind of disrupt the establishment, etc. But I quite enjoyed it, so I'd recommend it to people. But you need to look out for the hidden clues and messages in it, I think.
Interesting. Yes. I will credit Keith Richards as the man who got me into blues, or into Delta blues. But I've never been that big on the Rolling Stones, to be honest. They're just a bit boring, aren't they? Don't you think?
Yeah, I'm not a fan at all.
No. I mean, they're tight. They do some, but it's all blues rock, and it's all like, you know, some wankers from London doing blues rock, not like people from Georgia doing blues rock.
So yeah, exactly.
It's all a bit weird. Anyway, over the past couple of days, this story about Halifax has caught my beady eye. I was really shocked to see my old buddy V put out a video about this. I saw PJW put out a video about this. And I saw it going around on Twitter. And I was just thinking, is anybody ever going to learn, Pharaoh? Like, I mean, you know, the system's giving you a role to play as a kind of rabid gammon. And I've been watching these tropes of go woke, go broke play out, you know, for years now. And to see someone as experienced and as knowledgeable as Paul Joseph Watson lean into it And like he really zeroed in on this guy called Andy M, who we'll get onto in a second. And to, I don't know, it kind of beggars belief. So I thought, well, a good use of our time today. I was going to spend, I was going to take an hour of Bob Rabinian's doing it tomorrow. But in a way, fortuitously, we had this space to fill instead. And I thought, well, actually, what better way to tackle this issue than getting on our very own advertising and marketing guru, the author of Foundations of Entrepreneurship himself, Pharaoh, to break down this story and to have a look behind the headlines, as it were.
Because there's a couple of different elements to this in my mind. There is the kind of brand side. What do brands do to kind of create these situations? You know, is it again just all emergent, or do they ever plan to do any of this? And then also, I think it's interesting to analyze the newspapers as well, because yes, the brands are kind of producing this kind of stuff, but you got to remember that the media survives and thrives with moments like this. It's stuff like this. They absolutely lap up. They can get hours and hours of content, easy clicks, easy rage, easy anger, and just lap up all the advertising cash at the same time. So there's a weirdly symbiotic relationship between woke capital, in quotes, and the media. What I thought I would do is to kind of break down a little bit as to some of the typical PR and marketing processes. Mm-hmm. How do you end up in a situation like this? So
yeah, I mean, just before we get going, Pharaoh, just to kind of set the table, as it were, do you think it would be worth watching a couple of minutes of PJW just to see what this story was, you know, just to kind of see where my disappointment is coming from, and then, you know, your presentation will kind of pull the curtain back a little bit on this sort of bullshit, if you want.
Sure, please do.
Yeah, let me just find it. Hold on, here we go. So this is PJW. He put this out on his Anything Goes channel, which is his kind of second channel, but it's, you know, still a bigger channel than any of us have got. So let's have a look.
Now, get woke, go broke has become a bit of a boomer cliche, but we've just witnessed one of the most glaring examples of it ever. Halifax Bank. Pronouns matter. It's a people thing. Gemma, she, he, hers. Yeah, the subsidiary.
Imagine my shock. Hey, imagine my shock, ladies and gentlemen. Let's carry on.
Rate of an $886 billion net worth bank, Lloyds Banking Group, is gonna tell you what language you can use. This is the same bank that got propped up back in 2008 thanks to a £30 billion taxpayer-funded government bailout. But the reaction to their tweet probably...
I will say, though, because I've always been a PJW appreciator as opposed to hater, Pharaoh, I do like him slipping in that populist talking point there. That's good politicking.
Yeah.
Getting it, oh, they got a bailout, you know, that shows you that they're fundamentally corrupt and they're on the side of the elites and all the rest of it. Good framing, but still, let's carry on.
Probably wasn't what they were expecting. What if a Halifax employee doesn't want to put pronouns on their lapel, perhaps because they reject the cult of gender ideology? Will they be disadvantaged in any way? Barred from promotion? Fired? That was the general tone of it, and all things being well, the controversy would have just fizzled out. But then Andy from the Halifax social media team decided to get involved. We strive for inclusion, equality, and quite simply, in doing what's right. If you disagree with our values, you're welcome to close your account. Oh, Andy, what have you done? Turns out insulting the intelligence of your customers and telling them they're free to close their accounts led to a massive amount of customers feeling insulted and closing their accounts. Whoops. Oh, Andy. Result? Well, Halifax has lost millions of pounds in investment because people across the country are closing their accounts en masse. Andy! One account holder told Mail Online they have already pulled out investments and savings worth £450,000, while many more said they were closing ISAs, cutting up credit cards, or transferring balances to rivals after they accused the bank of alienating them with pathetic virtue signalling. Andy! My wife and I have followed this advice, partly due to Halifax's current virtue signalling, but mostly the eagerness of Andy M to lose customers. Mortgage is being moved. Credit cards have been cancelled. Deposit account closed. Had been with you since the 90s. Nice work.
Andy.
Just closed my Halifax account after 19 years with them. They can stick their pronouns up there, his, her.
Andy.
Branding expert Martin Townsend said Halifax's policy is a Ratner moment and an astonishing mistake that will be considered one of the biggest PR blunders in recent history. He told LBC it's a Ratner moment, I would say. It's astonishing that they do something to make...
Farrah, Ratner, those... I believe it was like a jewellery or a watch company who told their customers to do one back in the 80s and then they went bust or whatever. Is that right?
Yeah, although, again, it was a very different time, but I guess we can talk about that, later, you know.
Yeah.
Themselves look right on them virtue signalling and they end up looking like the most old-fashioned bullies telling them, if you don't like it, you're welcome to leave. It's extraordinary. Who treats their customers like that? I've never heard of a company inviting their customers to go. It's so typical of debate these days. If you don't like it, off you go.
Can I just say, I tell people to go watch Tim Pool all the time. I don't care.
Go. How is that inclusive? There are big questions about Halifax today and who came up with it. Andy! Apparently some people phoning up Halifax trying to close their accounts are being blocked from doing so by woke employees who are simply ignoring the request. However, others say that many Halifax staff are apologetic over the whole thing. Customers hoping to switch their accounts to HSBC after ditching Halifax should probably note that HSBC retweeted Halifax as original cringe. But at what point is being anti-woke better for business than being woke? Seems that thanks to the Andes of this world, we might be approaching that tipping point. Andy!
Yeah, so I thought this was a particularly shite video from PJW because, I mean, this video could have been made like 5 years ago and PJW should know better than this. So I'm gonna pull up your presentation, Farrah, and we'll go into why I think that.
Yeah, like the only thing I would say in his defense, because he's now got two channels. He's got his kind of main channel for the bigger, like, quality bits of content. And then his Anything Goes, it is just like that is the tabloid the tabloid version of his own content. And I think the problem is because he's so reactive to the kind of marketplace and what's going on, you know, he's like an engine that needs to be fueled by this kind of stuff, if that makes sense. But ironically, I think he's sort of turned into, there's a risk of turning into a media vehicle, just like we'll see in a second. Now, I've called this section PR Stunts and Controversy just because this kind of idea of doing something that's outrageous or that's shocking to try to garner additional attention is something that's gone on for years and years, literally since... like the Victorian times, basically, people like marketers have done something on purpose to outrage people and to get people talking about a certain brand. And so, in my mind, this whole incident is a PR stunt of sorts. As you'll see in a second, there are some kind of organic elements to it at the same time. But if you want to move down the slide, what I've done here, I just wanted to talk about the briefing process for PR and marketing agencies. So what typically happens is that a large business like the Halifax or another kind of international bank will have an agency of record. So you've got the client at the top, the agency at the bottom. And often they'll kind of send out briefs to their different PR agencies within a specific financial year or quarter. Say, for example, they may say, okay, this quarter is all about inclusion and diversity. We want to be seen as the number one inclusive bank. And then their agency will respond to that brief and say, look, this is what we need to do to achieve that. All of those ideas are then kind of fed back and then kind of marked out and then turned into like a campaign or a campaign strategy. Now, that could be in the form of like an actual advertising campaign, or it could also be in the form of a PR team trying to get a newspaper editorial. You know, the key metrics for a PR is like they call it reach, the number of people who see a story header, but also coverage in some of the top newspapers. That's the kind of gold standard for their industry. But I just wanted to kind of highlight the fact that it's a combination of the client and the agency. So again, advertising agencies often get kind of labeled as the key subverters, but the clients sign off on everything as well. So I think it's that key symbiotic relationship between subversive CEOs and subversive agencies as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, next slide, because this is another kind of key element to it. I think all of these kind of PR stunts fall out in the following way, and it begins with what I call either a concept or a moment. So a moment is something happening in the in either the social media space or in reality. So for example, it could be in this case someone tweeting out that original tweet, and then Andy kind of coming back. Something's happened. However, there's also what I call a concept as well. Like a moment is something that's organic, that just happens naturally. And I'm pretty sure that, obviously someone chose to tweet out that diverse and inclusive message. But I'd be interested to know if Andy M was purposely and aggressively, because it's quite a harsh reply to those people, you know. So the question is, did he do it on purpose?
Andy M is literally their social media account manager.
Yeah, well, I would say that often they use like a pseudonym to protect their identities, and also they'll have multiple people manning those channels. So, for example, Andy M will actually be run by two or three low-level grunts. And again, they kind of plan out and map out what content he's firing out. But I guess what I want to point out is that I do wonder whether this was purposely done, because, like, again, normally you would have guidelines or things like our tone of voice of how we deal with customers. And just to say basically F off is exceedingly harsh. So I wonder if they sort of knew that they were expecting this kind of reply, and they briefed internally and said, we're not going to give any ground. So anyway, this kind of moment or the concept happens at the beginning, but then a story is precipitated out of it. And again, this is what the PRs love to do. They want to get that first news headline. Now, that's great. You get some pickup, you get some reach. But what's even better than that is this entire narrative coming out of it. So you've got the story, the counter story. You've got riffs on those initial stories as well. And here you can see the kind of left wing, and I've put the so-called right wing press, as we all know that it's just through the lens of whoever owns those businesses. But for a PR, a single story is great, but what they want is 10, 15 stories all around the related area, all talking about Halifax at the same time, and then ultimately entering into what I call a feeding frenzy, where everyone on the left ring is talking about how wonderful this is. They're doing like positive stories about inclusion in Halifax. And then the right wing is, you know, just rabidly chomping at the bit. And basically they want this free feeding frenzy moment to happen, and it benefits them because, like I said, they get the reach figures, they get the coverage in the top press, they get the kind of social media mentions. Those are the big metrics that the PR and the social teams looking for. So again, often the so-called, you know, like, what is the point of what PJ is saying here? Again, it's really hard, because I think there are cases where, you know, we I'm not saying that there shouldn't be any right wing response to any negative story, but what happens is I think we often end up like getting into a bit of a rage about things, and then just like hate posting stuff, and that's just kind of fueling the beast, so to speak.
But it's also, remember what I was talking about, dialectics, Pharaoh, dialectics, right? The reaction to the pronoun name badges, right, in itself fuels this media idea that there's a conversation around this thing. There's and in this way, the left over time has its ratchet effect. It kind of moves the dial because it's dictating the terms of the conversation. And the right is not only frothing at the mouth reacting, which fuels their kind of resolve, if you want to put it that way, but they're also doing it in such a way that deludes themselves as to their power. the thing that's always struck me about Go Woke, Go Broke is that it's a cope. It's such a cope. And it plays into the populist delusion that the people have power, right? That the disorganized mass could, could just through individual acts of cancelling their accounts bring down a giant like Halifax. I mean, it's just, unless there was an organized committee dedicated to destroying Halifax, that's not going to happen. The boycott, I mean, the few people you have ripping up their Halifax accounts and taking their money and sticking it in another massive multinational bank, who, by the way, have exactly the same values. And there are about 10 of them. They have a monopoly on financial services in the UK. It's not like any entrepreneur could open a bank. Sorry. The regulatory barriers would be too high to overcome. So it's basically people telling themselves they have a power that they literally do not have. Do you understand what I'm saying? They are.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's really important about the language thing, because, again, he who controls the moments and the stories then controls the conversation, you know. Yeah. And you got to think all of these woke corporations are just seeding out thousands of concepts and moments on a daily basis. Only one or two of them are getting picked up, but it's all weighted to their talking points, if that makes sense. So they're always creating the conversations that we're having to react to. We're not the ones, we very rarely have the chance to create the actual conversation.
And look, even after all this time, there are people who should know better in the chat saying I'm being defeatist. I'm not being defeatist. I'm saying that you're fighting something here that you simply will not win. The random act of cancelling, of moving your bank account from Halifax to Barclays is not going to bring down Halifax. There are millions of people who have mortgages with Halifax. It's not like these aren't things that are quick and easy to change. It takes time to change your mortgage from one bank to another bank. Even at this time, where they try to make it as easy as possible, it still takes time. There are, you know, Halifax will be getting automatic payments from millions of customers around the UK. And what's more, they're not even independent. They're a subsidiary of Lloyds Bank, which is which has billions and billions and billions of pounds of assets. You know, I mean, they account for something like 1 or 2% of the GDP of the UK. You can't just bring them down by saying, "Oh, we're going to go to a different bank." It's just folly to think in those terms. Well, it's just not going to happen.
Even if there was a run as well, you know, PJW rightfully pointed out that the government supported and bailed them out. Why wouldn't they do the same? You know, in my mind, I think it's delusional to think it's going to have a big impact. But I've got a few little bits of analysis on that later as well.
All right.
But I think people just need to keep thinking about this framework and, number one, understand the importance of controlling the story. And also, like this, when we get into these feeding frenzies, I don't think it's the best thing to do. And actually, again, smaller critiques is a more effective way of understanding what's going on. Anyway, should we keep on going through? Oh, yeah, this is the other interesting thing. So I don't know if you know this, but people share content depending on the type of emotion or the type of mood they're in, let's say. And there's some really interesting results which kind of show some of the reasons why people share things. Now, unsurprisingly, joy is the number one reason for sharing. That's why kind of cat videos doing stupid things are always like the number one shared content. But take a look at the second and third. It's sadness, anger, disgust, fear. It's those primal negative emotions that are also very powerful and also trigger sharing. So what a lot of PR and marketing guys will focus on is the joy, is the kind of happiness that you get, but they're more than happy to tap into the anger, the disgust,
the dark
fear.
Exactly.
And again, I really think with the response from Andy M, there was a decision internally to say, look, this could, there was sort of this, you mentioned it with the Obi-Wan stuff as well, how they instantly reacted and say how everyone was racist against that female black lesbian Jedi or whatever her name was. Yeah. And again, I thought, oh, this is like, they've got a very big front against it already. And I wonder again in that kind of case, whether they had pre-prepared and said, look, as soon as we get like one racist message against her, we're going to do this big front, lots of content out there, and we'll get some press headlines again. See, that's what, whenever you see this kind of stuff, you've got to be suspicious about that it's been pre-planned.
I'm actually convinced that they've learned from Trump, Pharaoh, that polarization is actually an effective strategy.
Yeah, definitely. Like I think they learned some things from him. I don't know.
Obviously from the other side. Yeah. But also, unlike Trump, who was not in power, this cannot be overestimated at this point. They can get away with it because when it comes to some when it comes to something like having a bank account or having a mortgage, the half of the population they piss off literally don't have another choice. There is no anti-woke bank to go to because they're all fucking in on it together. Why? Because they're a cartel. It's basically impossible to break into building societies and banks. I think the last bank to break into the UK high street was Santander, right? Who were already a massive multinational organization. It's just that they managed to get into the UK market. It's not possible to just open up the based bank. They literally won't let you do it. If we wanted to, the regulators would stop us doing it because we don't comply with all of the things. And guess what? One of the things they have to comply with is diversity, and there's something called ESG, which is, it's not mandated by the government, but it's like a kind of it's like a virtue signal point that they have to do for shareholders, and I think it's a UN thing, but people should have a look into that. I think it started in 2006. Mike mentioned it in his Woke Capitalism video, and so the point I'm making is that whereas Donald Trump genuinely was losing the other half of the voters with his polarization, for these guys is actually cost-free because it's just an exercise of power. It's a flex. When Andy M told customers to bugger off, it was an assertion of dominance because it's like, well, what are you going to do, fucko? What are you going to do, pleb?
And it was really interesting. You didn't mention about that. Was it the Diamond Watch Company or whatever before in the 80s that did something similar, you know, whatever it was, the Ritter moment. But again, in the 80s, I think there were less monopolies, and so that was an example of a business that could actually fail. You know, as we've seen in the past, the government's not going to let the Halifax fail. Like you said, all of the regulations are in place. Again, the market's totally rigged in the financial space. So there's literally nothing you can do. I think in my mind, worryingly, we're seeing more and more monopolization of the marketplace. As well, you know, you can see it with cars, you can see it with even with fashion, if you think about designers and stuff and how that all catwalks, etc. You know, I'm trying to think of what markets aren't monopolies or have very restrictive barriers to entry to now, and there's almost nothing in my mind. So I think we're just going to see this more and more corporations, like you say, flexing on the plebs, showing that, putting them in their place, and doing stuff like this. But Should we move on to the next next slide, because I've got so just using this framework as an example. Yeah, you can skip on there. We can cover that quite well. So obviously in my mind, this is the kind of initial moment where you've got the kind of initial post. But like I said, that they'll have often what these guys will have is something called a content strategy. It's something that you will learn about if you buy Foundations of Entrepreneurship, where you kind of map out for an entire quarter or year what content is going where. So for example, for Pride Month, maybe they're going to be tweeting about trans stuff. for Black History Month, they'll talk about how the creator of Halifax was actually a black guy or something like that. You know, that kind of stuff.
We'll talk about Howard. Howard.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll get on to him in a minute.
Yeah. But as I said, they'll have like a brief as these goes out, as these messages go out, to say, here's how we reply to customers, etc. And again, if you normally see normal social media accounts, they are kind of quite nice and they'll be like, oh, if there's a problem, send it to our complaints team, etc. But this was a specific attack on the customer base based on the back off the back of it. So I'm pretty sure they knew what was coming. And again, they have a big account and they're a well-known name. And again, you can see the kind of the ubiquitous prioritization of the icon as well. Mm-hmm. That'll have been mapped out in the air. So this is the kind of seed point. Now, if you scroll down, the sort of moment comes with all of the responses, the inevitable response that they knew they would get from this, basically. Now, I tried to find, sorry, if you scroll down again, I tried to find the first story that mentioned this. Maybe it's worth talking about this a second, sorry. Now when this organically happens, sorry, if you scroll down one slide, you've got to think that if it's an organic moment, I'm so sorry, can you go up to number 10, sorry, the one before. If this is an organic moment, people will sit around a desk and say, look, how do we respond to this moment? And what I've done here is to kind of highlight the order of influence. And at the very bottom are the kind of the rank and file minions. They'll be doing a lot of the day-to-day decisions about stuff, and you know, they actually do, I think, possibly more than anyone else, the minions do genuinely care about like profit and what's right for the business. But as soon as you involve middle management, they don't really care about the profit at all. Like you said, it's about expansion of their own internal powers, expansion mm-hmm. of the management, pushing their ideology. And then you've got the kind of vision which sits above that. You know, this is the kind of diktat from the powers that be, that this is what our company's about, this is the kind of big things we're trying to hit, and all of their kind of promotion KPIs will be tied around it. You know, how do we, you know, how is your department hitting inclusivity for this year, for example? So everything cascades from that. And then above that, you've got the gods, which is obviously your C-suite individual, CEO, CIO, CFO, etc., but also the board as well. And if they get involved, you know, they act as, again, like mini dictators inside a business. And what happens is, as something gets more and more high profile, it kind of goes further up the pecking order. And again, you know, you may, for example, with the Gillette issue, the CEO literally got involved to give his opinion, and his opinion was, I don't give a crap, it was worth doing it and I would do it again, basically. So if we scroll down, I just wanted to highlight the company.
And incidentally, Gillette did actually lose a hell of a lot of money on that. But like I said, they're a subsidiary of P&G, who've literally got, it's not just fuck you money, it's like all the money. You know, these people have
a small state, a small
billions
a small
and
country,
billions
yeah.
and billions, and you know, the if you look at the annual revenue of P&G, it'll be like the GDP of a small country. You know, so it's nothing to them. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Carry on.
Now, if this was an organic moment, I just wanted to highlight these are the visions. So again, all of those day-to-day minions will be thinking about this in their heads, because again, like I said, their remuneration is going to be tied to this. But it's worth reading it out. At Halifax, we put our customers and colleagues first. We want to make sure that we do all we can to champion every type of person. So we're working hard to create a fully inclusive environment for our customers and colleagues, one that acknowledges all people and is representative of the communities we serve. Part of this means we will act as if we feel if something is wrong. We don't think it's enough to simply not be racist. We'll be actively anti-racist and stand alongside all our people and its allies. We stand against discrimination and inappropriate behavior in all forms, whether racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, ableist, regardless of whether this happens in our branches, offices, over the phone, online, or on our social media channels. Such actions may include account closure or contacting the police if necessary. We are committed to representing, understanding, and championing all types of people. We're on a journey to ensure that everything we do reflects this belief, and we're committed to always trying to do more and to do better for our colleagues, communities, and customers. So in some ways, I do think it, maybe this was all planted and planned, but you can see it in the visions that basically that we will literally call the police on you if you're homophobic. and also we're going to be actively anti-racist, anti-homophobic, etc. So,
I mean, when I've said that Antifa are the foot soldiers of the regime, if it's not obvious by now, they have exactly the same set of values as all of these, you know, massive corporations. You know, you really should go be watching Tim Pool. I just don't understand how people don't get this at this point. We live in a totalitarian anti-fascist state, which is defined by that very statement. It's not just enough, Pharaoh, to not be racist. You have to actively be anti-racist. Do you remember back when people used to talk about compelled speech? Jordan Peterson and Sargon and so on. I mean, we move past that very quickly, didn't we? Because now it is like, you know, unless you actively signal your support for BLM or for Pride or whatever, you know, we're going to have your job, basically.
Yeah. So in the context of this vision, which again would have come down from the gods down to all the minions, it's no surprise they reacted in that kind of way as well. You know, they're being actively anti-homophobic here. They're going to call the police on anyone who says anything homophobic as part of a reaction. And again, in their heads, if you're not doing this kind of signaling, like then you're part of the problem and you need to be deleted. So again, I thought that was interesting just as a bit of filler before the actual story broke. But if we scroll down a second, now these were the first two stories I could find. Interestingly, one from the Telegraph and one from the Pink News. So again, two sides of the aisle. And it's a relatively straight portrayal of that kind of moment. The first story, again, as a PR, you want to get that kind of foot in the door, the first bit of coverage, and you're looking for like a national newspaper to talk about this kind of moment that you've created. Now, actually, and again, it doesn't matter whether it's a right-wing newspaper, because again, someone like the Telegraph, for example, centre-right, they talk about it in a relatively like straightforward factual way. They don't try and do any commentary on it, so it's not like a negative story in their mind. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, I love the Pink News. Halifax Bank invites bigots raging against inclusive pronoun badges to close their accounts. So again, you know, the left side are absolutely lapping up this opportunity. They're getting everyone stood up and applauded Halifax in the Pink News office at that day. So what happens next after the story, if we kind of scroll down? You start to kind of get into the feeding frenzy. This a huge number of articles being created off the original story, and I've kind of categorized them into a few different areas. So if you scroll down, you kind of start off with what I call variations. So you've got the core story, and then maybe there's a few kind of tweaks or a few kind of additional follow-ups. And this was hilarious. This was from the Dudley Express, that well-known quality journalistic site. Halifax hit back at criticism. So it's not about the main article. It's about that Halifax responding to the critics, if that makes sense. So the story's evolved and it's tweaked. Now, I thought what was interesting is take a look at who wrote this. Clark Simone, an SEO journalist there. So SEO in the marketing world is a search engine optimization. So this guy has purposely created this story to try and get clicks from Google. So and this is the case across all of the major media platforms. As part of the feeding frenzy, they want to tap into demand on search, you know, people searching for Halifax plus badge. And so they're creating stories to like game the algorithm, so to speak. So again, this is what I was talking about. Like there's this symbiotic relationship between the journalists and the woke capital, because they need these kind of moments and stories to exist. You know, the Dudley Express is not getting any advertising revenue apart from via apart from this kind of these kind of low quality stories. Let's have a look and see what other kind of narratives there are. There's derivation, something a bit different. So now again, the story's evolving. You've got the Attorney General giving his opinion, slamming Halifax over, flippant reply, blah, blah, blah. Again, like, who, like, what does this really mean? Again, it's just people just talking about stuff. There's a really good Twitter meme from like Anglo Twitter right now, where they just reply like nothing happens. I don't, have you ever seen that meme before? Yeah, and it's kind of stuff like this. People will talk, and there's like, oh, we've heard this rumor about this, we've heard this about this. Nothing happens. And again, the Attorney General won't do anything. I can guarantee nothing will come of this story. But the journalists get their clicks. The, you know, the Daily Mail gets all of their revenue from the story at the same time. So it's a totally cynical view. These guys do not care what the Attorney General says. They do not want them to to like make a ruling on Halifax. What they want to do is to keep this story going for longer and get and squeeze more cash.
Yeah, I have a number of stories, Pharaoh, that I'd like to that I would like to look at as well, because it struck me that the Daily Mail have really stretched this story out. They've got like four or five articles out of this, of which this is one.
Remember that they are, again, one of the most trafficked and profitable journalist media companies out there right now. So they are masters of, squeezing the story. Can I just show you one more archetype, and then we can go into your stories directly. And then the last type is kind of what I call riffs, which is maybe like a meta commentary on the thing itself. So again, this is a classic Telegraph article by some boomer. Thanks, Matthew. Woke capitalism is busy destroying itself. Like, no one believes this. No one believes this at all. But it's got the kind of keywords in there. It's got woke. It's got capitalism. You know, all the kind of middle class centrist Telegraph readers smugly rubbing their tummies and at home lapping up this commentary. And they're like, yes, it's just a matter of time before, you know, Disney and a lot of them collapse.
You see, I mean, this guy and the average Telegraph reader imagines this is coming from the social media team. They don't imagine it's coming from the very top of the organization, and even beyond that, from BlackRock.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
I mean Matthew Lynn, looking at me smugly there. I mean, if I sat down in a room with him and we talked through the structure and we looked through some of the statements that come from who you call the gods, and the people like Larry Fink, who own 5% of each of these companies, what would he tell me? What would he say? Oh, sorry, mate.
Just emergent.
I'm just a journalist. I just have to sell newspapers, mate, which means I have to, print lies for my idiot readers to read.
Yeah.
These people make me angry, because they're complicit in maintaining all of these delusional myths that keep the system in place that we're looking at right here.
Yeah. Just one thing, just to kind of show that this was tied into the original article. Look on the left-hand side, related topics, woke, HSBC, Disney, and Halifax as well. So do you see what I'm saying? Something like the Halifax story will be looked at by the editorial team, and they'll be like, oh, there's a lot of buzz around the Halifax story. Why don't we create a story reacting to that story or have some commentary on it? So this is what I'm saying about those initial seeds are so important, because editorial teams are going to be reacting to trends and big stories that are out there. So again, if you can control those moments at the very beginning, you can control all at the other end what the right-wing press is talking about, the center-right-wing press is talking about right now, which I think is very interesting in the current structure. I mean, I went through a place mentally where I thought all you need to do is to take control of the reins of the right-wing media and then you'll be fine. But I think because the problem is actually on the other end, you know, at this beginning part, I personally feel like you need to dismantle the entire journalistic class. You know, this entire system is set up to go one way, basically. But is it worth going into some of those stories now that you had, say?
Yeah. So, I mean, in fact, I don't want to derail us too much, but I also have something I discovered, which is just beggars belief, which is a segment that James O'Brien has introduced, the LBC talk radio host. He has a segment, Pharaoh, called Woke Watch, in which he essentially plays defense for the regime. And I mean, as we'll see, Woke Watch is a bit of misdirection. Really, it should be called Gammon Watch, right? But I just find it fascinating on a, both on the on terms of what we've been talking about, but also on a cultural and like postmodern level, that the discourse has reached the place where this James O'Brien spin-off show, Woke Watch, exists, where he deconstructs the reaction to what Halifax have done. I just find it really, really interesting. But anyway, let's have a look at some of the stories. I might as well share my entire screen. So, first of all, the Mirror went and found Howard, right? And Howard has come back. He was the, for American viewers and people from other countries who don't know, Howard led the Halifax advertising campaign in the 1990s, right? And there were a number of articles that where the kind of opinion piece from the right-wing commentator was, bring back Howard. That was a happier time, basically. And I just find it interesting that he has been brought in and is actually leaning into the kind of populism and is being a bit of a kind of people's hero. What do you think of Howard getting himself involved?
Again, it's one of two things. Either he has a connection to Halifax still and is on the payroll. I do wonder, because he was such a popular figure, that maybe he got like a royalty rights. The cynical part of me says that they briefed him again to say something negative, because again, that's like, oh, person at Halifax used, that it was a core part of their business, now says what they're doing is wrong. So again, that's a great angle and a great story.
I personally love the return to Fresh Prince element of this, but anyway.
Yeah. But again, it's all acceptable discourse, you know. This is what we're arguing at. This is what we're spending energy on, name badges, when, you know, we've had the highest legal migration in the last 100, you know, since ever. But also, types like this tend to like just want to be famous again. You know, they've had that sweet taste of fame and recognition as their kind of their meme goes out of popularity. Often they can kind of get quite depressed about stuff. So I wonder if you relish the chance of being relevant again, and how do you get headlines by being controversial at the same time? So that's what I think. Either he was briefed beforehand and said, just say what we did was terrible. That'll get some great headlines. Or he was just like, I want to be in the newspapers again. I want my face recognized. Oh, do you want everyone remember Howard? Blah, 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 blah. So it could be that.
And I will say, a number of journalists did this for him already by saying, oh, bring back Howard. And then, oh, lo and behold, there he is in an exclusive in the Mirror. So there we go. And then Mail, Exodus from Halifax over Banks' work badges. That was the first of about five stories they ran on this.
There was 1,000 shares on that again. So yeah. Significant, I would say. That's going to give you a reach of like 100,000 people plus.
Halifax embarrassing woke attempt at a conclusion alienated everyone, says Carol Malone. Notice the framing, by the way, is so weak, because she's basically saying that the whole concept and agenda of inclusion is fine. It was just the execution, right? This is what the establishment right always do. You know, they find some little nuance to nitpick at and try to make out that it's that, not the whole fucking caboodle. You know, the fact that they were having this conversation at all. In the same country, these people will be shot! Sorry. Let's carry on. Corporate woke virtue signaling in Halifax introduces pronouns to staff name badges. What was really funny about this? Author Douglas Murray weighs in. Douglas Murray
went on
Australian, right? This is the Australian Sky News, right? And this is how you know that this is 100% establishment, because I have come to see Douglas Murray as being like the willful patsy of the regime in all ways. I used to think he was a lot more sound, but he has definitely shown himself to be a 100% regime. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%. Look at that smug face. I'm sorry, just you need to zoom in on it, because it's just he's so pleased with himself to be able to go on. And then again, this is perfect for him. It's totally safe. It's non-controversial. You know, he can talk for 10 minutes about this terrible corporation, what they're doing wrong, get his paycheck, get like plug his book or whatever, and then, you know, go home laughing. There's something I wanted to talk about, the centre-right journalists, and again, something that Carlyle brings up about respectability, you know, this idea of the gig man. And I think that runs through their journalism, because they're constantly looking for respect, what I call respectable truths, truths that aren't controversial, truths that stick to the overall regime narrative. Like you said, it's that idea of the fly in the ointment, or, you know, there's one thing that's wrong, but if it wasn't for that, you know, I'm a reasonable guy. But it comes from a place from wanting to be seen to be respectable and still part of society.
Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. Carlyle is 100% spot on when he talks about the gigmanity.
Yes.
And Murray is part of gigmanity, as is I tell you who I'm surprised has not been making hay with this week, and that is Julie Birchall. I thought she'd be all over a story like this. This is perfect. This is absolutely perfect for her.
Have you checked her Twitter? That's the question.
Yeah. So anyway, obviously GB News ran with it. Shame on Halifax in a time of financial uncertainty to be so brazenly bigoted and condescending, says Murky McCrory. So
also the use of bigoted as well, using their language again.
Yeah. So
bigot is their word.
So they're using classic black lesbian tactics here. Here's Mercy McCrory, based woman of colour. You know, she's basically saying that you know, we don't have the luxury to, you know, Halifax shouldn't be doing this because, you know, the economy is going to shit and that really matters. So a bank should be more responsible. And if you read this story, she repeats the adage, go woke, go broke, springs to mind. You know, you can say it 100 times, it doesn't make it any more true, Mercy. But in fact, it strikes me that it's a very good business model to continually tell people, go, you know, that they have hope of, you know, making Halifax go broke. You know, in 50 years' time, when Halifax is still here, and you still have your mortgage with them, you know, I'll say, oh, well, do you remember, by the way, 50 years ago, there was that whole controversy over the pronouns and everybody said, go woke, go broke. What happened to that then? Oh, right. Halifax are bankrolled by one of the world's oldest and richest banks. You know, I mean, it's just... anyway, here's the Telegraph, who are doing the very telegraphy thing of strafing Halifax from the left.
No, you're the fascist. The left are the true fascists.
Here's Camilla Tamini, an associate editor with the Telegraph. And look, it's even tagged as gender pay gap. Woke Halifax seem to have a problem with women.
Absolutely tragic, yeah. This is so sad.
I mean, this is meant to be the establishment centre-right newspaper for thinking people in the country, and they just use it to push feminist talking points. And then, even more tellingly, the Times has basically the headline, Firms Applaud Halifax's Inclusive Pronouns Badges. In other words, power approves of this, and therefore, you know, it's pretty much right on. And it's interesting because the Sunday Times is a paper read by the sorts of people who run these firms. So it's basically, you know, it's basically the closest thing to being like the neoliberal centre. The Times and the Financial Times, I would say, are the kind of neoliberal HQ. Would you agree with that? And they're basically saying, like, listen, they're the audience that really counts for this.
Because again, like, even if, let's just imagine for a second, Halifax did go down, the CEO and the C-suite team would never be responsible for what happened. They would never lose their job. They would just be parachuted into another one of their buddies' positions. And again, if you see how they select CEOs these days, or again, C-suite people, it's all about connections, networks, etc. And so long as the network's strong, that's all that matters. So that's why, so long as the firms approve, that's the key thing that the CEO is thinking. Even if I lose my job, I'll find one almost as better, probably better paying within a month, you know, as they love a martyr. So,
and now we have, really for me, the cherry on the top of this story, which is the James O'Brien segment. Let's just watch a little bit. We won't watch it all, but let's just watch like a few minutes of it, okay?
Woke Watch.
The Halifax Bank, where I don't think I have an account there anymore, but I certainly did. It was in the little bullring in Kidderminster when I was growing up. I had all my first bank accounts at the Halifax. Let me get this story absolutely right. Exodus from the Halifax over banks' woke badges. What are you cross about today, lads? Badges, James. Pardon? Bad badges. Oh, what's written on the badges? Is it something bad? It's my name, and I can, if I want, put pronouns on it. But what do you mean you can if you want? Well, I don't have to. But if I work for the Halifax and I want to put my pronouns on my name badge, under my name, I can if I want to. Now, that's outrageous! How can they contemplate such a disgusting assault upon our British values?
Can we stop a second, sorry? Just to kind of critique him again. It's interesting, he's taken stuff that people wouldn't have necessarily known about, the fact that it's not compulsory, supposedly. But the rage at this story was Halifax's reaction to it. But he's managed to flip the narrative into being a, you know, you're the one that's unreasonable about this. You know, it's just a normal thing. It's just a normal thing. And people have the choice to do it. So you're actually cutting down on choice. So again, I mean, James has just got such a punchable face, don't you think? He's just such like a puffed up.
Yeah, this is classic centrist liberal tactics. Minimize the issue. It's a you problem. This is basically what he's doing here. He's reframing it to make it, you know, to give it the most reasonable possible spin, thereby trying to knock the wind out of the sails of anyone who was angry about it in the first place. I've seen interesting variations on this strategy recently. There was a story doing the rounds the other day talking about how it's perfectly acceptable and fine for like drag queens to do shows for children. Did you see that doing the rounds? It was like in the Metro or one of those sorts of papers.
Yes.
And if you read the comments and the framing of that, they were trying to make the argument that, you know, it's been with us for a long time, the pantomime dame, you know. And that is, again, taking the most innocuous and the most kind of acceptable face of something and kind of misdirecting people from what people are really angry about, which is the sexualization of young children and, you know, things that are obviously inappropriate for young children, i.e. any act which has sexual elements before they're, you know, 16, 18 years old. And it's the same thing. And I find it fascinating that this sort of rear guard action exists, because who is the target audience for the James O'Brien rant? It is the person who thinks of themselves as sensible and reasonable, right? The classic Britisher. Tony Blair, the Britisher or the Tony Blair voter, right? And this is, yeah, I wonder, like, how effective is this? How many people do you think are caught by the web of someone like O'Brien? This video, by the way, had about 200,000 views.
Yeah, again, what he's doing is he is equipping an army of midwits to take on people who aren't as smart as they are. Again, I can just imagine, just like your working class guy who hasn't had a time, who hasn't had 15 hours to research everything about the story, who's just read the news and taken it at face value, who's gotten cross about it. But again, I think that the point that he's dug out about the optional nature of the badges, again, there's no way of verifying that without having to look through various stories, or again, what's the context of that as well? They don't know. All that James is doing is arming those midwits and then basically saying, you go off there and I want you to, you know, punch down to some gammons and to some people that I can fool and make them look stupid. You know, it's a very interesting, you know, I think that's who his audience is. He's not trying to convince anyone. They're all on his side. What he's trying to do is to give them talking points. And I bet you'll have, I'm just trying to think of, I'd know, some kind of centrists, influencer figures or whatever. They'll say the same thing about the optional nature. I bet that's one of the stories are going to be now.
People are saying he's not a centrist. He's actually a far lefter and all that sort of stuff. The thing is that the only difference between the centrist and the far left is that the centrist runs this kind of sensible man in the room. The centrist will always try to present themselves as the voice of reason and as the person who really knows better. So James O'Brien, on occasion, I can imagine, would he wouldn't think anything of taking a swipe at some commie who'd gone too far or whatever, because that's his USP. You know, he's a thinking man's. He's probably less clever than Blair about it, it is essentially the same game, which is, you know, but if you look at what O'Brien does, he's only ever running cover for things that are radical all the time, right? So in terms of substance, yes, he's far left, but in terms of presentation, he's a centrist. But that's all that centrism ever is. It's kind of default defense of the status quo as it stands right now. And because our status quo as it stands right now is, as we talked about earlier on, a totalitarian anti-fascist state, that means James O'Brien will be default defending far left values, because those are the values that the power structure holds. And anybody who doubts this can have a look at the pride flags in London, or the, you know, the actual statements of the UK government when you actually read what they put out, or of any corporation or of anybody in power or of the Church of England or of any of the tentacles of the beast. It should be obvious that that is the power structure, that is the regime. So to be a centrist in today's society is to be a far leftist, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. I think for me, this whole little segment also is another reason why those feeding frenzies from the right are so dangerous. Because again, often we will encounter stories superficially. You'll just see the headlines in the Daily Mail and make assumptions about stuff. And again, most people don't have time to go and do tons of research about, what's the badge policy of Halifax. And so basically we're setting ourselves up for failure and to have, like, you know, to put things at stake or our own intellectual capital and reputation over these trivial matters, where we're set up for failure, if that makes sense. Something like the drag queen stuff is just it's simple, because you don't need to back it up with a story. You just call them a nonce and then you win. That's literally the game. That's such a safe topic. While something like this, there's so much like additional kind of complications behind it that I often think that all of the energy around it is potentially wasted. Or again, we set ourselves up for failure or losing face, which I think is really important.
Just run me through it again, will you? Well, I've got a name badge already, and the Halifax have introduced a scheme that means if I want to, I can put my pronouns on the name badge. And I don't know what I'm going to do. It's the worst thing that's ever happened. Who's cross about this exactly? The people who've got the choice of putting their pronouns on the name badges? The people who actually wear the badges? Are they the ones who are cross? No, apparently not. It's other. So who is cross? Well, let's find out. Back to today's Super Soraway Daily Mail. One of Britain's biggest banks has seen a mass exodus of customers after it told those who disagree with its latest woke policy to go elsewhere. So I think, can we have a hit on that? Its latest woke policy?
Woke Watch.
And now it gets interesting. Many have told Halifax they are closing their accounts after bank staff were encouraged to display their preferred gender pronouns on name badges. How do they know that? I hope they haven't just been sniffing around on Twitter for angry people and taking them at their word and reporting it as if it were actually gospel news. Let's find out in the very next paragraph. More than what?
Yeah, so, I mean, you get the idea with this. He's now going to deconstruct the lazy journalism of the Daily Mail and call it out, you know.
Yeah, and again, this is the problem. Those are our sources. It's kind of like if you go out on Twitter and make a big deal out of it, you're staking your Twitter reputation on on the journalistic quality of the Daily Mail. I think it's just so dangerous for serious people. While, again, I think there are topics which are much more sensible to talk about where you don't have to do tons of research or, you know, check all of the sources for the, you know, for the quality. So,
all right, let's get your presentation back up. There's smug face again. So,
yeah, and this is what I was sort of saying. So basically, I think journalists like to see themselves as, you know, telling truth to power, and as some kind of almost philosophical searchers for truth. But they really don't, in my mind. The journalists do not look for the capital T truth. You know, that these kind of bigger transcendent truths, either they will find respectable truths for their various parties. The Telegraph is looking for will present you with a story that is respectable within their circles. You know, it's against it, but also it doesn't really decry anything bigger than that. And the same thing from the left wing side. You saw from the Pink News, that's what's respectable in their circles. You know, the journalists aren't trying to ask bigger questions and say, you know, what's happened with society, that this has even happened, or this is a priority. You know, none of the bigger questions are being answered. It's always this kind of skin deep bit. Or conversely, you've got this kind of large section of journalists looking for the saleable truth, those SEO journalists, as I said. You know, that was absolutely horrific. People whose job it is just outright to generate money, you know, like that is their one job, to harvest the clicks and outrage of people. And that is the two types of journalists out there. And that's why I feel like the entire class is defunct. Now, I think where YouTube is quite different, or those individual people are different, is because there are people who fall into one of those two gaps. You know, again, Tim Pool has a certain air of respectability to him as well. Like, he's trying to create that respectable content rather than trying to get to the fact of the matter. But because the networks are smaller and people are in control of what they can put out, they don't really fit in the traditional, like, journalistic archetype, if that makes sense. So I think we just need to basically abandon all forms of traditional media, in my mind. I think the only respectable form of print media is like zines produced by groups of 4 to 5 artists or something like that. You know, people who are free from the financial controls or financial manipulation. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, who do you think? Because I I've been making this game, Pharaoh. I've been making an RPG. I don't know if you'll ever see the light of day, because I've only done a few screens and it's taken bloody hours. But you play as somebody who's trying to save the West from the regime. And that I said, there's a spiel about the regime being like an octopus, which has 8 tentacles, the Crown, which is the government, the Chamber, which is the permanent civil service, the bench, which is obviously the legal apparatus, the church, which are basically corrupted churches, you know, like churches that have been corrupted by wokery, whatever. The network, which is like the NGO, the NGOs, the chess, which is like the, you know, what leftists used to call the money power or international finance, or, you know, in fact, exactly some of the people we've been talking about today. The mouth of the journalists and the head of the academy, the professors, the university. Out of the eight of those, who do you think are the, who do you think are like the absolute worst? Or who do you have most contempt for? Because I feel like the media class, that what I've called the mouth there, the journalists are very low in my estimation. I don't know if they're the absolute worst, but what do you think?
Yeah. I would totally agree. Again, I think just so many of them are liars and hacks, and they don't really care about things anymore. It's just like a job for them, you know, or they are ideologues desperate to portray their kind of bigger ideas or to permeate it. But they will all like bow to money, you know. They will all cow to mammon, you know, and. Again, it's interesting to see like the Telegraph's journey, for example, because again, as like a 16-year-old, used to, like when they first went online and stuff, I used to read it, and they've changed massively, and they've gone so much more centrist and neoliberal as time has gone on. Where I was just like, I was like shocked reading some of the articles on there. And I was just like, this just isn't for me anymore. But it's all just down to the money power, and that again, journalists talk about like how virtuous they are, but I think they are some of the most influenced people by money at the same time, as much as they hate to say it, you know, whether it's through advertising or through ownership at the same time.
Yeah, out of the eight of them, I was thinking like which ones are the most save, like which ones are the least far gone, or the, and weirdly I would say the bench, the legal,
yeah, I was thinking profession, that, yeah.
Is probably the least corrupted out of the eight of them. I mean, the church could be saved always as well, of course, you know. But I do feel like they require like a clear out at the top as well. Certainly the Church of England does, but all of the churches seems like they have people who shouldn't be there, you know, people who have not been true to their faith, etc.
There's factions. I mean, certainly within Anglicanism, there are, I would say, like three major factions constantly vying in the synod for power. But ultimately, there is one which is in charge right now. But you could cut out the cancer relatively easily. I mean, regarding the bench, let's just say certain family members of mine are in the legal profession. And I think because they are so tied to the law, and especially, you know, case law, common law, etc., that there is something trad about it inherently. You know, you are tied to the past. Where I think that the two major pause areas, I'm sure Panama can talk about it more with his experience, but it's the bar and the judges, both of which are totally captured and totally controlled. By the regime, basically. So again, if you got rid of them, I think it would return to normal relatively quickly. So
do you think the fact that lawyers have to deal with like actual criminals or people who are on the wrong side of the law means that they can never truly be fully captured, or could you have a system where the judiciary and the legal system is just completely stacked against any dissident, basically? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I was thinking that, because I think, you know, they do have to interact with the realities of life, let's just say, in terms of people, and also again, so some of my family I should be careful. They specialize in family law, basically. So, mm-hmm. Like divorces, etc. And again, you just, you know, they on a daily basis hear like the kind of sad stories of desperation and misery from the various like failed marriages, etc. That go on a daily basis in today's society. Mm-hmm. And that affects them, but they are also influenced by the law as well. So again, if the law, it would be like, I think you need to have a revolution, because not like a revolution in the legal sense, because there is so much of this like old law knocking around still. Mm-hmm. But if you got rid of it all, then they would be captured. But until that moment's happened, you know, we often make a big deal of the Supreme Court. It doesn't really affect that much of law, if that makes sense. So you would need to have like a root and branch rehash of the legal system to posify it, if it makes sense. But I do think there's a lot to it, which is like a rock.
I mean, this may be interesting, but in my reading around, the mid-century Germans had the biggest trouble with the legal profession and with lawyers and with judges and things like that. Even ones who were like fully paid up SS members and things like that. So I just wonder whether it's always the most difficult, you know, of the eight of those that we've identified. Obviously the network, the NGO thing is a tool or is an attack dog for what I call the chess, the money power, who also I would say have captured the government and the civil service, really. But I feel like it's always going to be more difficult. And I think even today, if you look at like Erdogan or Orban or any of these people who have more like autocratic tendencies, they have the biggest problems on the legal side with people who are just entrenched in the system, who, you know, stand by principles and things like that. Which is not to say that I'm defending lawyers, because in another sense, they're some of the worst people in the entire world. But I'm just saying that there seems to be deeply embedded reasons why you'd have a much bigger problem with them than with, for example, journalists who, in practice, have been completely supine and to power.
Yeah, the journalists will change on a dime, while I think the legal mind is a lot slower, and part of that's mainly so they can charge out more hours to their clients. That's all I'm saying. So
okay, let's carry on. Right. So what happens next?
Yes. So this is my kind of Mystic Meg. These are the three scenarios of what we'll see in the next couple of weeks. Either we'll see a double down on the situation, a support and forget but no regret, or we'll have a stop and recant. So the double down is obviously when you'll have someone like the CEO coming out saying, you know, we think this is a super important issue. This is a core part of our company values. And as part of that, they'll do a new campaign which kind of goes off the back of it. So again, maybe they'll do like an advertising campaign talking about pronouns. They'll bring in some influencers, just like they'll get some kind of non-binary person to talk about how it's so important to be seen in a Halifax store or something like that. And out of the three options, I think that's possibly going to be the most likely in this scenario. Just look at the values. They've made it clear that this is exactly what they think, and actually they should be doing more of it. The support and forget but no regrets kind of interesting, because that's when they basically try and put it under the carpet, but then they just never apologize for it anyway. So again, I would say that's what happened with Gillette. Lots of bluster. They wouldn't promote the story. They don't try and mention it. Their PR agencies will try and spike anything that's going around. However, fundamentally, implementation would just continue. So they still get what they want. Just no one's talking about it at all. And then eventually it will happen a couple of years later. Someone will bring it up and the CEO will be like, oh, we were so proud to, you know, be the first big bank to have name badges with pronouns on, for example. And then finally, the stop and recant, you know, actually, you know, the right actually winning one of these things. I mean, it does happen, but it's like once a year. And even then, I feel like the victories are are only allowed to make sure that people don't explode. So
now, PDW went very hard on Andy in his video. Do you remember? Oh, yeah, Andy. Yeah. Do you think Andy's going to get fired, or do you think he's going to get promoted, or do you think he doesn't really exist?
Well, like I said, I think the social media team will probably get like a bonus of some kind for the amount of coverage they managed to get out of it. But I'm sure that they would have been briefed beforehand, so everyone knew what they were going to say beforehand. There's just been too many gaffes in the last 10 years. There's been a lot more control from a brand perspective on who's in charge of the account. You know, like, did you see the guy who was, oh, it was like some kind of peanut butter company that had a began his post with an N, not realizing what would happen next. That was quite funny. And then had to delete all the posts. When they start deleting the posts, you know that wasn't planned, basically.
Right, you know. Yeah. What was he thinking?
I don't really know, and I didn't really understand the context of what he was saying. It sounded like something totally different. But again, you know, a lot of social media companies will try and give brands like an edgy nature or a bit of character to try and get more shares and to try and get more conversations. You know, this is a classic thing, like 5 years ago, where, you know, McDonald's and Burger King would be having a spat on Twitter, etc. And it's just kind of like two sassy gay men having a cat fight in a pub in Soho or something. I don't know.
Can I just say that personally, if I ever receive an email for someone who's got pronouns in their name, I just lose all respect for them and can't. I mean, I had a few loose ends. I've got a chapter coming out with some, you know, some Shakespeare thing coming out at some point. And but it means I've still had to deal with them. You know, they've been sending me emails with he, him, you know, with pronouns. And I, every single time I send an email, I just, I'm just using all my restraint not to just say, what the hell are you doing? Just have some dignity and self-respect, you fucking cuck. But anyway, these are the people responsible for it, you know, ultimately. But what I said earlier, I got a bit fed post earlier on, I stand by that. I think that ultimately the only way to deal with this problem is going to take, it's going to take massive force, or it's just going to be an utter loss in my view. I know that there are some boomers, some older people who think, oh, well, these things come and go, you know, it all wash over. I don't really see that, Pharaoh. I think that they are entrenched, they're dug deep, and it's going to take methods that people find, you know, it's going to take methods that, broadly speaking, are beyond the pale to deal with this problem, or it's not going to get dealt with. And the longer it doesn't get dealt with, the further away the West becomes unmoored from its kind of moral center. Because imagine then being part of a generation who's used to having the pronouns next to their names, you know. Imagine a school register where it's got, you know, Laura, she her Bethan, she her, you know. Anyway, let's carry on.
So what are the consequences of this? I've tried to do a bit of analysis as best I can do. We won't know till next year to see the supposedly hundreds of thousands of pounds that have been withdrawn from Halifax. But a couple of things, and these are kind of few tips that I'm going to go through in a bit more detail on Foundations of Entrepreneurship. The first thing is using Google Trends to see how people are talking about brands. So one tool that Google offers is the ability to kind of search for a certain brand or a certain keyword, and you can see relatively how it's performed in the last year. You can see Halifax over the last year has sort of kind of been on a bit of a slope down. This is all relative. They don't have the full number of searches. But in the last week or so, can you see that big spike up? the kind of the last dot. And I'd say it equates to about a 20% increase in people searching for Halifax related keywords. So in terms of like raw people who are talking about and searching for Halifax, it's massively gone up. So that's certainly a big positive for those guys. If we scroll down, I tried to pull out the share price. Now, obviously, due to Biden's America, we are now in some kind of share terminal decline. I'm not really big into share numbers. It's hard to tell because this is obviously like a 3 month period and it has been going down. But in my mind, it doesn't look like the share price has declined more than it was going down already, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I mean, I can't reiterate this enough. There will have been literally 100 people who exchanged on their houses yesterday. And whatever money was lost by that bloke ripping up his contract on Twitter, you know, was replaced immediately by somebody else getting a new mortgage for the first time. 450 grand. It's not even a drop in the ocean with these people. They literally couldn't care less. Especially when you start understanding how they interface with things like the Bank of England and the money supply in the first place. I mean, there's just no, like, you cannot bring down, this is their system. This is the banker's system, is what I'm saying. So the idea that, you know, a few people cancelling their accounts on Twitter is going to have a major impact on a bank like this is, it's kind of laughable. I mean, I don't know what kind of size of event would need to happen for a firm like, you know, Lloyd's Banking Group to really start feeling it. How many people do you think would have to shut down their accounts?
Yeah.
A million? 100,000? You know, maybe then they might wake up. But if it's just a few people, it's just they can brook that any day of the week.
Yeah, 20. I think you need 20%, and then all that would happen is that the government would bail them out, or they would get, you know, Vanguard would buy, they would take it private for a while. You know, there's literally no winning playing their game, I think, basically.
I mean, go woke, go broke needs a scalp, right, in order to actually have an impact, okay? But even then, it needs to be prepared for the fact that if one company falls, you don't then expect all the other companies to say, oh, yeah, we're going to abandon it all now, because their whole thing has been to quadruple down, quintuple down, right? I mean, I can't think of a single example of a major company really having a dent. Like, I mean, Disney, right? What happened with all of the pedo stuff? From a couple of, like, is that closed Disney down? Have they
lost
money? I mean, what's any of it again
due to those management feedback systems as well? Like, no one in middle management would have been fired for anything that went wrong. They would have just been moved across, or they'd moved to a different business. There's a real problem right now. And again, I personally feel like it's the decoupling of business liability from owners, basically people need to pay basically for the mistakes in a painful way.
I mean, I
want to advocate for debtor's prison, basically. I want to bring back Dickens and send all of these bankers back into some kind of like penury, basically.
The Disney example is a better example than the Halifax one, because the Disney one was actually strongly driven by an organized minority. And there was the campaign was being spearheaded by elites, right? But in that case, by Ron DeSantis, and by had a bit of machinery behind it. Okay, in order to get that 100,000 people to actually close their accounts in Halifax, you'd have to campaign, you'd have to ring people up, you'd have to generate outrage, you'd have to literally be on it 24/7 for a few months, make it like your only thing for a while. If you actually wanted to bring down Halifax, it's not going to be done by generating outrage through Daily Mail articles, and 200,000 people watching PJW, right? PJW, like everybody would have to campaign tirelessly in order for that to happen, because you're not going to get a spontaneous mass movement. It has to be driven by somebody. It has to be organized by somebody. And you have to make it easy for people. You have to say, oh, by the way, this bank here has done no kind of woke stuff for the past 5 years. That's probably an acceptable one. This is how you do it. This is how you have to like streamline the process. Otherwise, something like moving a bank account is very, very, has a big barrier. Right. And they rely on that.
It's a real problem. It's like in the advertising industry, people just don't change. They don't change utilities and they don't change banks, basically, because it's just such like a non-interesting thing. You know,
it's passive, like a car insurance or something. You know, all of these things are just passive. And my damn BBC license fee. I've been a passive payer of that for a long time. People on this channel know, because I just it always comes at a time of year where I'm doing something else. And it's like Christmas Day or something. It comes through, and it's like, oh fuck's sake, you know. Anyway, shall we continue? Let's continue.
Yeah, sure. Now, interestingly, I thought one thing that was fascinating was it's already gone off the trending list, so it's not kind of listed here on the top 10 items. No. So again, it is this kind of flash in the pan. So, like I said, if they do want to continue the story, we're going to see something big come out in the next couple of days. Or they're just going to forget about it.
What's that fuel protest one? That's exciting. I like the sound of that.
Did you see that there was a fuel protest in England today? But I don't want to spoil your UO.
No, I missed that. So well, we'll have to. I mean, we're going to do the.
You should look it up, because you need to see the what they did to the protesters, which was to give them a whole lot of points in the license, find them. Like, again, just totally opposite to what the protesters got for the Extinction Rebellion guys or whatever. It's just so obvious that we live in a two-tiered legal system, even in England. So,
yeah, a totalitarian state, a woke totalitarian state. Anyway, here we go. Subversions.
Okay, so what I've got is just a little bonus. Some other times where brands have used controversy to kind of sell a brand, and I could try to highlight some of the archetypes of some of the kind of branding ideas to create controversy with an aim to get a story out there. So, for example, a classic one is through subversion and through just doing things that have never been done before, you know, like taboo breaking, basically. So, of course, the huge LGBTQ advocate Marmite. This is from an ad in 2003 with the first brand ever to show a same-sex kiss on TV. And again, it's just like it does. You know the classic burgers comic or whatever. This is sort of where stuff comes about. In this case, it is actually selling Marmite, but they're trying to do the most outrageous thing possible, so they'll get coverage or they'll get people to share it. They're going to get a whole lot of like diehard fans that will advocate for Marmite, etc. But fundamentally, like, what? How does this relate to Marmite itself? You know, not really. It's you got to see it as a vehicle to get more coverage or to get more PR columns, although no doubt I'm sure that there'll be a certain cadre of people in kind of Marmite middle management pushing these values down as well.
I mean, I will say, given that Marmite produces a disgust response in like half of everybody, this is a low key based campaign from Marmite saying, like, you know, get, you know, two men kissing produces a Marmite reaction in half the people.
Well, that's also what's quite funny, because I have got some like quote unquote based examples as well, because it goes two ways, you know, people doing controversies the other way as well. So hopefully we'll see some of those in a second. But that I thought that's interesting as a relatively early, you know, we talk about when did the rot set in, you know, there we go, 2003 is a nice early example, almost 20 years ago now, can you believe, right? Can we scroll down? So another classic one. And again, I do really wonder whether this is really brought up as one of the big campaigns, and it was rolled out. It was held up and won loads of awards. Was the Real Women, Real Beauty campaign? This is really, in my mind, some of the beginning of having like ugly people on adverts. You know, you see today, we can't walk down the street before seeing some kind of bloated, disgusting creature from the pits thrust in front of us.
I mean, these ones are relatively attractive. These ones are relatively attractive compared to those.
Yeah. Right? But again, they've got the kind of like what they would consider at the time a plus size model there in the middle. This was kind of plus size 20 years ago. But anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting. Maybe we'll skip this one because it's a little bit uninteresting. But then the next one is more interesting in my mind, which is the Gillette example. Now, could you just bring up the article a second? So what I've managed to do is to find the creative agency that came up with the ad and came up with the pitch actually wrote up a little competition entry, and this is kind of their response to it. You might need to zoom in, or maybe I'll bring it up on my screen one second so I can see it. If you scroll down a bit, they've got a slide called like We Believe. Keep going down. So we've all seen the adverts. So I'll just read it again here. So the brief. So like I said, the brief for this advert was to make Gillette relevant to Gen Z and younger millennials by redefining the best a man can get on the 30th anniversary of the iconic tagline. So the execution. If you turned on the news in 2018, it was hard to argue that men were at their best. No comment on that. Men's behavior was a spotlight never before, and while women had brought attention to the issue of the Me Too with the Me Too movement, men had remained silent. We wanted to provoke a much-needed conversation among men and force the issue to the surface. We partnered with renowned director Kim Durig to create a film that would get guys to sit up and take notice, and to trigger a dialogue on the issue. So, can you see? So, there's a couple of things already in their kind of thought process. They were tapping into trends that were going on in the marketplace. So they saw Me Too. I can imagine the creative meeting. One of the guys would be like, oh yeah, Me Too's hot right now. How can we bring Me Too into Gillette? We're going to create, this video trying to redefine masculinity. But again, see how you got to understand how these guys think about things. They're talking about creating much needed conversation. We want to trigger a dialogue. You know, it's all about getting people to speak about stuff. And how do you do that? By creating controversy. Now, again, look at some of the success metrics there as well, in terms of like how do these companies think about what a successful controversial campaign looks like? You know, it's the number one trending topic on Twitter. Over 15 billion impressions with only 5 hours of paid media. So that's an impression is like an advertising view or a video view. So according to them, 15 billion people saw the Gillette ad. Third most Googled search term in the US. 110 million worldwide views for the ad. 70% of millennials and Gen Z responded positively to the spot. I mean, I can't believe that. That must have been a BS poll. But anyway, this is all tied into, you know, what works. You know, how do things work, and was it successful? And again, in our minds, this advert was a total nightmare. But it got a lot of eyeballs on it, and certainly in their minds, they would consider it to be successful. So again, I thought that was an interesting little. Example. Any thoughts on that at all?
I mean, obviously they haven't mentioned all the thumbs down and all that stuff, but of course that seemed important in 2018, but in the rear view mirror it doesn't feel important at all. And I think that the dialogue part goes back to what I was talking about, dialectics and no dialogue. Do you remember that video I made? Whereas I feel like as long as you're having this conversation, they're winning. They see it as a win if you get outraged by their advert, right? So in a strange way, you need to develop like advanced Evola kind of know ride the tiger against them, and basically we need to be driving all of the debates and all of the dialogue. You know, you're going to talk about immigration whether you like it or not. You're going to talk about these things you don't want to talk about whether we like it or not. And you make them on the defensive and you make that the issue. And again, the only person who I've actually seen pull that off in our lifetimes has been Trump, when he forced people to talk about all sorts of things they didn't want to. Now, obviously, that's not all Trump was, and in many other respects, a disappointment. But that was one time where the right was driving the discourse, and forcing people across the board to face issues they didn't want to talk about. If they're doing it, we're losing. And I feel like, if you look at that PJW video that we started off with, I feel like we've regressed in 5 years to the point where Halifax are able to, you know, pull off all of these same tricks again, and everybody's still falling for it. We have to resist this.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point about, you know, I think we're both not trying to say don't talk about anything, or just to kind of ignore all things. But I think you've got to recognize that so many of these discussion points are controlled and seeded out by your enemies. And again, it's like there's almost like a discernment to it. You need to, whenever you see a story, you need to say, you know, well, who's generated the conversation about that? Like, is it, and is it a winning conversation? Is it worthwhile talking about, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the point where you want to discuss things. And like you said, we need to be pushing stuff harder from our side as well.
Yeah. And also, just don't forget, none of this stuff is up for debate in our minds. It's not a debate. We do not accept it as a debate, right? It's just like, we just don't go there. I think the best meme for this is, you know, on Twitter, there's that's bait meme that people post. I think you should just see this as bait, and like, don't take the bait, because they want you to take the bait. Look, they're boasting about, you know, oh, we got 15 billion people who were basically calling us everything under the sun, by the way. I mean, how many of those impressions were negative, not registered here, because they don't care about that. They've taken it as a win, even though we know they lost lots of money on this, but still.
Yeah.
Right.
There's more stuff across there. Maybe I'll tweet that later. People can read in their own time. The next one that's worth going through is the HSBC. I think that's quite a good one, which is next. It's worth just like hanging on the image a second, because I just hate that advertising campaign so much. Yeah.
Oh, this was awful.
This was all over London. This is possibly it literally made me angry seeing this in the tube. We are not an island. We are a Colombian coffee drinking, American movie watching, Swedish flat pack assembling, Korean tablet tapping, Belgian striking, supporting, Dutch beer cheering, tikka masala eating, wonderful little lump in the middle of the sea. We are part of something far, far bigger. So again, it's just literally just like deconstructing the idea of Englishness or Britishness there, you know, and also like the archetypical person doing this is just like such like absolute consumer drone here. Look at them, just that Colombian coffee. This is like just your average London dweller, you know, absolutely terrible. Anyway, so basically HSBC did this big campaign. It's called the We Are Not an Island. I put the ad there as well, because it's equally as egregious. I don't know if you want to look at that, but if not, there's the case study for it, which is really interesting, because this campaign was very much hated by people on the right. Lots of outrage around it. Again, I'm pretty sure PJW did a video on it.
I mean. The thing is that this one is very successfully attacking the core of what British identity is. And whoever wrote it hates hyphens as well. So they don't adhere by the, you know, you should put hyphens in adjectives before a main noun. But as foundations of writing for you, let's have a little watch of it. Hopefully it will play.
We start the day with a Colombian, a Guatemalan.
I'm very disappointed that Richard Awadi Wadi is in this. I kind of liked him back in the day.
No, he's just like a sellout. He's literally just like...
Very disappointed.
He's so lame. I mean, automatically, listen to the background music. It's Elgar, isn't it? So again, it's kind of like trying to have this kind of faux British undertones to it. But again, the subversion has just begun.
How dare you take Elgar and do this?
A piping hot Costa Rican and a Danish to go. We drive German, Japanese, German, and we ride Taiwanese. We watch American movies on Korean tablets and struggle with Swedish flat packs.
Is this globalist gloating, this advert? It's kind of like,
it's just rubbing it in your face, basically. Just look at this.
Look how successful our globalism has been. You know.
Yeah, it's interesting that it's all consumer related, or virtually all consumer related, in my opinion. Yeah.
Disgusting.
Our heroes hail from Chile, Argentina, Brazil, and often Belgium. We eat Chinese, Italian, Indian, and go Dutch. Some of our...
Think of the curries, the advert. You know.
Best friends are Mexican, Siberian, Hungarian, and French.
Hey.
We live on a wonderful little lump of land in the middle of the sea.
But we are not an island. We are part of something far, far bigger.
And I mean... Like I said, so this is a couple of years back. It was controversial. Lots of, again, hate clicks. I don't think it permeated as much as something like that Halifax ad. But it's worth opening up the case study just to see like how effective it was and how it did, because they had some actual stats as to some of the performance there. No, sorry, can you see the Wunderman?
Oh, right, okay.
That link across there, yeah. So if you just scroll, we have to read all of their horrific advertising blurb. But yeah, re-establish the purpose. After years of international heritage as a global blank, HSBC has arguably lost its relevance to the UK. Britain had lost sight of what HSB stood for, allowing the majority of potential customers to believe it was largely a blank for wealthy foreigners. We set out to re-establish the brand's point of view and purpose in changing Britain, revitalizing the brand and inspiring audiences to reconsider HSBC with a brand with values they share. Again, it's interesting. They were kind of like... you know, they want it like the bank wants to change Britain there. That was a little bit too much detail. The idea, the daring campaign, We Are Not an Island, reminded Britain that no matter what your politics are and no matter what happens, the things that make us quintessentially British are inescapably international. I mean, I don't know, does drinking coffee from Costa Rica make us inescapably British? I don't know about that. I mean, I'd be happy to delete all of the things on that list to retain a form of national identity.
No, but nothing more British than cheering on an overpaid Brazilian footballer. Essentially, yeah. That's what they were saying, you know.
But it, in some ways, it's kind of interesting, though, because it's kind of like, here is what globalist Britain is, and here are the things you would have to lose to not have it. And I could live with it. I can live with all of the things gone, you know. I don't mind not... I could never have a curry again for the rest of my life, and I'd be okay.
Why was there such an emphasis on Belgium in that advert? You really seem to lay that in.
I don't know anything about football, so maybe it's like a famous really, Belgian.
I can't really think of why Belgium was so highlighted, you know. Anyway, let's carry on.
But there we go. These are the major stats. So there we go. Growth. We put HSBC at the heart of the national conversation. Conversation again, unprecedented strategy, inspired a tremendous amount of growth. So they got their year-on-year current accounts grown by 50%, increased the number of people switching to HSBC by 140, ad awareness by 300 in a single quarter. The highest increase in growth by any bank in a single quarter for our overall brand index score. So that's like a brand tracking metrics to see kind of how well recognized. But again, I sort of wanted to dispel this idea about going woke and go broke. You know, HSBC went full neolib globalist and managed to almost increase their current accounts by 50% in a single year, which is a tremendous number of a tremendous amount of wealth. So I'm just not sure that the stats back up the saying, basically. And these kind of subversive campaigns do get interest, and they do work in many ways, I think.
Oh, of course, people are highlighting it was because of Brexit. They were going on about Belgium because it's Brussels.
Right, of course, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even if these ads were not the actually the cause of that, the fact that they can put it there does lend them weight, right? Even if it's not really the actual cause, from their own point of view and from the point of view of people in that industry, they've been vindicated, basically. This is not a Gillette situation where they lost loads of money. They actually increased their sales by that much, which is fucking sickening to me. But of course, it shouldn't really be that surprising. I mean, who knows? Maybe HSBC had better rates than anyone else, which really drove that. I mean, who knows what the reason was? But it's like we're on their turf, so they're going to be able to spin the story that this stuff works, right? You know, I mean, this is what I keep on saying, like, on paper, a lot of, like, the go woke go broke stuff is just not borne out at all. You are more than your capital. You're an icon of the world. Your salt beef bagels eaten outside curry houses on the way to the Spaniards Inn, your strawberries and cream, carnival fever and cup champions. You are London. It's all like material culture, isn't it? This is kind of like material Marxism, essentially. It reminds me of a Annal school, like Fernand Braudel, like the structures of everyday life is nothing but the material processes, you know.
So, I mean, this is probably written by a Marxist copywriter anyway, so
Also,
sorry, another reference to the Pearly Queens, even though they've basically been pushed out of London anyway. But
think about right, the fact that it doesn't really matter that it's being used for neoliberal ends, because they both have a materialist base, which is a point that we've made many times now.
Mm.
Right? There's no, like, you know, I'm not saying this is a Marxist campaign. I'm saying that the language is like the idea that the material culture
defines the nation. Yeah.
Defines the nation is a Marxist idea, which is very sits very happily as a neoliberal idea as well. So there we go. Yeah. Oh, look, it's everywhere. I definitely saw this campaign. I saw it on bus stops.
It was pretty big. Yeah,
you know, they went big on it. So,
but again, think about the secondary effects. I think, you know, a lot of these things are that they're creating taboos or saying controversial things to sell stuff. But what they don't, I think there's unintended consequences often with these advertising campaigns, where they are just changing people's minds at the same time. You know, we're moved by these words and these sayings, and a lot of people will be like, yes, I am whatever I am. You know, that, like, Britain is nothing more than the coffee I drink and the curry that I have, you know. I wonder if there's a connection between some of those emphasis in those advertising campaigns and some of the talking points people come back with, because whenever I hear about, like, quote unquote global Britain, they're always going on about food. Like, that's that they're sort of they're obsessed with you know, having the most delicious things from across the world. You know, it reminds me of some kind of, like, Roman emperor who must have the, you know, like, a quail stuffed with a budgerigard taken from the furthest lands of the empire or something like that. You know, it's just, it's a very strange way of identifying, like, who you are.
But it's because that's a benefit that they can sell. People identify with that. They could sell it. Everybody's been to an Indian restaurant or whatever. Whereas, you know, crime statistics don't sell it, or, you know, the breakdown in social cohesion and trust in a society. These are downsides which are dishonestly not highlighted by these people, because, you know, they're selling, at the end of the day, they're selling their system and their business and the system that their business relies on. All right, what else?
I've got a few like quick fire controversial ad campaigns that again just played into extreme views to like with the express purpose of getting shares, which are quite, some of them are quite funny.
Imagine having your culture reduced down to being a salt beef bagel. I mean, you know, well, we're laughing. That's what they're saying. London is. London is nothing more than a salt beef bagel. Okay. Where do they even come from, salt beef bagels?
Poland. Via someone else.
Yeah. Well, I've never been clear on that because there's the pretzels as well.
Well, I think the group claims it, but I believe that it's from local food. Personally, from what I've looked into,
it's a Polish New York thing. I always thought, but you know. Anyway, let's have a look. Here we are. We accept. What's this one?
So this was a Airbnb. Did a big thing around accepting refugees, and I think they said they were going to take in a whole load of refugees. So again, something totally unrelated to the business, just purely to garner controversy and to get additional clicks. It was quite a funny campaign, but I don't think it's worth watching. But now this was something that was quite interesting. Do you ever remember the Lynx adverts in the 90s?
Yes.
Because they used to be quite edgy, or I thought quite racy or whatever. But that's an example I thought of something, like pushing a different, like more kind of, I don't know, dare I use the word hypersexual taboos or whatever. You know, it was all about like the reason why you put on our, this is for Axe, which is the same brand, but in America. Lynx is the British version of it's literally the same packaging, and they have the same kind of thing, and of course all owned by Unilever. It also just amuses me that Unilever had a bondage themed advert as well.
Filth. Oh god, what's this now?
This was for the United Colors of Benetton, which is again a clothing brand. Which I think it took a combination of photos, but also like Photoshop stuff, to kind of like it was a part of their like unhate campaign. But again, it's just so like why are these companies pushing this kind of stuff? And again, the reason is like partly because both the agencies and the clients agree with the values that underpin this. But also, they're purposely just pushing stuff out to get hate clicks.
I love the fact that kissing Angela Merkel is considered to be the same as a gay kiss.
That is actually a great shout. Yeah,
that's Sarkozy, isn't it, Nicolas Sarkozy?
Yes. Oh god.
I mean, I was surprised. Is that the old Pope Benedict? I'm surprised he didn't sue them. You know. This is a really bad thing to do to the Pope, especially to that Pope. I'm sure the others will happen. I mean, that's the North Korean, that's old Kim Jong Il.
Yeah, it's very. The whole campaign's very unsavory, but they don't care because again, that was heavily shared.
Benjamin Netanyahu kissing a Palestinian guy? I'm really surprised that action wasn't taken against them for this. This is just really fucking egregious. That could have cost somebody's life, you know. Awful campaign. That's Hugo Chavez, isn't it? Okay, let's carry on.
This was interesting. This was about the whole Spy Cops thing that came out where people were like living double lives as like eco-protesters. And so, do you want to guess which company had this big campaign against it?
Is that Lush?
It is Lush. It is Lush, Also, it's very telling that you can identify what a Lush store looks on the inside at AA. That's plenty of gifts for Mrs. AA brought from the Lush store, clearly.
Well, I've been around long enough to see a Lush, yeah.
But it's, again, they're very interesting because, again, they constantly push other narratives or, you know, social justice through their advertising campaigns, you know, if it's the form of, like, animal testing stuff. But also, you know, this, like, anti-police advert run by... So for those who don't know, in America, the Lush is a, I guess, kind of like a fragrance and perfume brand. You can buy smelly things for your house, basically. But imagine a soap company coming up with, like, anti-cop rhetoric. It's just, it just blows my mind. But again, there's like a dual purpose to it. They tick off the values for the company, but also this is intentionally done as a bit of a stunt to garner attention and to try and get some column inches.
Sorry, can I understand this? Lush put this in their own window.
Yeah, this is one of their like stores, and so they've merchandised this.
Because it looks like protesters have done this to Lush. It's a very bad. This is a very bad thing because it looks like Lush are the ones who are paid to lie. It's really confusing.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, but no, they paid for the entire display and stuff, and they had it across multiple stores from when I was reading about it. So, but yeah, not great campaign. But there's also kind of campaigns which kind of attack certain areas. Now, you ask for some positive campaigns. You know, this is potentially one of the greatest advertising campaigns of all time. The Yorkie, it's not for girls.
It's so good that people still remember it now. It was a brilliant campaign, mainly because it reinforced gender stereotypes, and that's based.
I got the advert if you wanted to get some nostalgia vibes for that. But again...
Let's have a look. This is a... Because this is how Beardy exists. Let's have a watch.
Yorkie, please, mate.
You're not a bird, are you?
No.
Explain the offside rule, then.
A player cannot be in an advanced position of the opponent's last defender when the ball is played.
Open that. Stockings are tight.
Stockings.
Oh, look! A big hairy spider! You know, that wrapper really brings out the beautiful blue of your eyes.
Really?
Yorkie. Five big masculine chunks of chocolate. It's not for girls.
Best advert of all time. Birdie caught out. She couldn't resist the appeal to her eyes. okay.
Hilarious. But... The only one thing I would say is that obviously it kind of plays into our side, but again, it's like we're being weaponized the other way around. So again, I do think you got to, it's sort of similar to based X person meme, you know, when it's like, people highlighting an example of like, oh, here's like a based Mexican or whatever. I don't know. It's a dangerous thing to play with. And again, you're ultimately being sold something. So even if it is based, you've got to be careful. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much of what's being done now is a backlash against Yorkie. It was just a different time, right, I suppose. I mean, do you think Yorkie was trying to annoy everybody? I think pretty much everybody apart from fringe feminists would have laughed at that advert in 1998 or whenever it was.
I mean, I would say it wasn't as controversial as some of the others, but it's certainly, you know, it was the 90s still. This is kind of like after Women's Lib and stuff. So I think it was intentionally done to kind of grate with people. But they probably also, as part of their marketing, found that 75% of men already purchased Yorkies. So it was never going to affect their bottom line in the same kind of way. But... Mm-hmm. I still think it's a controversial campaign.
But also don't forget, right? Brands, Nestle own Yorkie, right? So they will have identified bars for girls and good bars for boys in their marketing strategy. So they don't need Yorkie to be a universal seller because, you know, they also make you know, whatever Milky Bars or whatever else it is that was on the Nestle line, they would have been pushing something else on women in a different effort, in a different campaign.
Yeah, again, like Galaxy would be an example. So, like, Galaxy is like the woman's chocolate, so you only see women on the advert, and even the design is kind of softer and more feminine as well, as opposed to the big chunks, the big manly chunks of a Yorkie.
What's this one?
This was around some of the Florida stuff that's gone around about schools and LGBT stuff, LGBTQ stuff being said in schools. And so as a protest to that, some people invested in a big advertising campaign encouraging people to say gay. But again, it's just such like an aggressive form of advertising. It's intentionally, so this was created in Florida, a place that rejected that ideology and didn't want it. And people are trying to intentionally annoy people and get more attention for their cause by being aggressive, you know? So it's in some ways, I think, a very dangerous strategy. You know, PR stunts can often go wrong and annoy the wrong people. So for Halifax, I think they're relatively safe because, you know, because of their monopoly position. But stuff like this, I think, is much more dangerous, and you can end up in a lot of trouble.
No Democrat would put their name on it, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Hilariously. Yeah. what's this?
Just, I actually found this as like this was an unintended ad, but I just it became very controversial and went round. So it just amused me. I think they weren't intentionally meaning to do it. However, because I think Mr. Clean's like a Spanish brand, they do like the magic eraser. Right. If you've ever seen that, yeah. So this Mother's Day, get back to the job that really matters. I don't know. This is just a wholesome. You know, it's just a woman who's looking after her family. I fully approve of this advert. So I don't see anything wrong with it.
Has Mr. Clean been discontinued after after Aunt Jemima Gate and all that, or is he still going?
I think he's possibly come out now. They've probably got him in a bondage suit or something. That's they've made him a gay man.
I mean, he does have a little earring. I mean, we have to ask D which side you have to wear that earring. what's this?
So this was like a bit of a placeholder for all of the WWF and PETA adverts, which, again, they entirely thrive off controversy. They intentionally do stuff to annoy people. I don't know if you can read the text on the top right-hand side, but it reads...
Yeah, the tsunami killed 100 times more people than 9/11. Conserve the planet. It's brutally powerful.
So again, the controversy they're trying to create here is basically saying 9/11's unimportant compared to climate change, you know. But you know, people lost their lives in the Twin Towers, and it's a very unsavory moment. And just an entire advertising campaign where you've got all of these planes smashing into Manhattan is intentionally egregious, with an attempt to try and annoy people. So in some ways, the kind of masters of this are these kind of WWF and PETA types, where they'll just say just ridiculously controversial stuff just to get like a couple of lines in the papers. I think the problem with this kind of stuff is that you sort of get like shock naturalization. You know, you can only be shocked so much. People have this with... charity stuff where they have to get increasingly graphic with what you see. You know, at first it's a starving child, and then it's like, oh, it has to be an emaciated child. Now we have to have like a child dying on TV to affect people. So that's one problem with a lot of these taboo things, and actually explains why there is that natural, you know, Cthulhu swims left element to them. The entire tactic of a controversial PR campaign, by its necessity, over time will require more controversy, if that makes sense. Yeah. People get numb to that kind of like lower level stuff, so you have to say even more and more extreme things. So I do think a lot of advertising has this leftward swing to it, naturally built in.
I mean, this is in bad taste, obviously. What's this next part, Pharaoh?
Again, this was just some advertising campaigns that were controversial due to failure. And it was kind of like, I don't know if it was intentional or not, whether they did it. But there was the classic, if you scroll down, the classic Pepsi commercial. Did you see this with one of the genders?
That was awful. Absolutely awful. Do you want to have a little quick watch?
I mean, it's a classic.
It's one of the worst ads of all time. But we can talk about why this failed in a moment. Not to get people's hopes up too much, but let's have a watch. Oh, this is so hideous, Pharaoh. It's so hideous already, but let's carry on. I will say, as a really minor thing, I quite like that all black Pepsi can. I don't think we get those here. Are they black like that here? I don't think they are.
No,
I think that's quite a cool design on the... just on the can itself,
yeah. You know?
Do that people ever stop going out to protest? Or they do? Do they?
No.
What was that? Where she took off a wig and she took her lipstick off. What's the idea there?
So yeah, well, so I think the whole concept is there is a protest going on in town. Now, one of the things that amuses me about the ad is that they hadn't at the time the balls to connect it to any topic. They didn't want it to be controversial, either right wing or left wing. So they just had like peace signs, like you can imagine the meeting. Look, guys, like no one can complain about peace, right? You know, so you've got this generic march, but of course it's just filled with all the colours of the world, all the various people. And as it's going on, it's pulling in people from the rest of the city. You've got the character of the Asian cellist who took a break from his rooftop cello playing, as you do, and, you know, live at his penthouse apartment that he makes from cello playing. And is drawn into the protest, and you've got the powerful Muslim woman who's just, you know, she's some kind of photographer, and she's just frustrated with the photos, and she also is drawn out to the protest. And finally, you know, the Jenna woman, she gets the nod from the cellist, you know, come along to the protest, and she immediately just says, you know, I'm going to quit my £1 million contract with this company and join this random peace protest and become part of a powerful
figure. We actually ironically have three super privileged people who are joining this protest. Like, you know, do you know any people who make their living from playing the cello or from their photography? I mean, these are 0.1% types, you know. Also, the crowd is way more diverse than actual protests are in real life. I've often noticed that protests are overwhelmingly white and
old as well, just filled with old people, basically
filled with kind of boomer hags, essentially.
Is either boomer hags or just dysgenic young people, basically. Soys, yeah. Waifs, what does Carlisle say? The cow faced, the dog faced,
ox face, imp faced. all right, let's carry on. It's a very long advert, though.
Yeah, this is the full cut, isn't it? It just feels long. I mean, it's only 2 minutes, but it just feels like an age because it's so bad.
Pick the blue can, uncool. What was that? She's creating peace by giving the cop a Pepsi.
I think it's harking back to, you know, like hippie protests where they would put flowers in the guns, etc., or get the police to respond. But as opposed to like any sign of peace, that, you know, she just convinced the cop to have a can of Pepsi, and then again the powerful like Muslim photographer managed to take a photo of that epic moment, and everyone stood up and applauded.
I would say of all the people we've seen, these two that were looking here would be the most likely to actually be at this protest.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, I would say this is a very thin America, isn't it? It's kind of reimagining of a diverse, good looking, you know, not one of those cops was part of the donut squad, for example. Where are the 20 stone blue haired feminists, you know, here?
That's what happens when you have a diet purely based on Pepsi Cola. So,
and there's no way this guy would be there. He's just too cool to be in this scene, you know. He's just all right. Terrible advert, fucking terrible.
But yeah, I mean, this was so you can end up having controversies just by accident, as opposed to like intentionally doing stuff. But then again, you can still kind of get PR capital off the back of it. And Pepsi, had to do a big recanting of this and apology. So that was a failure.
But that's because they pissed off the vocal minority, woke organized minority, not because they pissed off any right wingers.
Yeah, it's true.
It's because they annoyed the power base.
Yeah,
because it wasn't woke enough.
I do wonder if they had chosen like a trans rights protest or something, it would have been totally different. You know, it was the fact.
And the message the message was unification. The message, you know, I think they would have been more happy if she'd used the Pepsi can to bash the cop across the head with. You know, he's clearly a bigoted Trump supporter, isn't he? You know. So not polarizing enough. Too unifying Pepsi. No one is happy all the time. What's this?
This was like the Burger King trying to do some what are called unhappy meals, where again it was kind of like an inversion of the McDonald's Happy Meal, where they created, like, you can see a DGAF or a salty meal, not like actually salty, physically salty, as in the someone who has their bile up. the pissed meal. And again, this was like absolutely slammed at the time, and controversial as like taking the mick out of mental health. But yeah, it was a terrible campaign. Awful. This was quite funny.
Based out campaign, Vera, what do you reckon?
I mean, exactly. You know, it's like it's all about keeping your skin clean and bright. That's what I say. You know, don't let anything ruin it.
But so, this got backlash, did it?
Yeah. Again. So this is like unintended consequences on the advert.
I don't know where Yiz the Eunuch is, but I've got a new avatar for you, Yiz. There you go.
Right now, I've got a couple of other ones, but you may want to just like turn off the screen and then check them beforehand and make sure you're happy with them, because that's
right. So The first two is fine.
Yeah, you don't want to do the last one.
The third one may be a bit...
Okay, yeah,
fine. While I'm thinking of Susan more.
Yeah,
else.
No, for sure, for sure.
Okay. Although if Susan's going to take down this stream, she will.
Yeah.
Because of my earlier comments. But, yeah, here we go.
Now, this was an interesting in terms of, like, creating controversy. So this was from Protein World. And again, like a small startup brand in the UK, like an online protein seller. And they basically created a series of billboards, "Are you Beachbody ready?" and put them across London stations. And this became a huge controversial point, but from the other side. So again, I think it's a really interesting case study. You know, we've talked about the hate and the rage clicks from our side. This generated a lot of anger from the left wing to such a degree that Sadiq actually banned this this advert at the same time. So you can actually make it go two ways, which is interesting. Maybe we need to be doing more controversial stuff. Although I personally didn't find, obviously, as a sensible, normal person, don't find this egregious at all. You know, like, all it's saying is, you know, are you looking good for the beach? You know, I don't think the model is particularly skimpy, but I think maybe it was just putting a bit of light into the average female middle-aged cat woman's life and showing them up for the bloated, amorphous masses.
She's a little bit thin, I would say. A little bit.
Sure.
Kind of, what do they call it, size zero, but yeah.
But I just thought it's an interesting example. So you can actually create the same kind of controversies, and again, maybe that's what we need to be doing is stuff like that. But it's interesting because I think the things that we think would make the left trigger, I think, are different actually. And I was amazed how much like pushback there was around this.
Well, one of the most interesting things I've read about this sort of thing recently. Was I've got a book here called Thinkers of the Radical Right, written by a bunch of shit-lib academics. One of the funniest chapters I've ever read in any academic book ever is the chapter on Bronze Age pervert in there. Okay, reading the left-wing academics' account of why BAP posting his physique shots and, you know, the bronzed up just. The pictures of kind of healthy masculinity that Bat puts on his feed. The explanation of why that is so triggering to the left from the academic is really, it kind of was really interesting because he kind of laid out basically this why Bat has success in winding up so many people. And he knows this. And I think that's successful because all he's doing is posting healthy white bodies, basically. And all they can do is basically say, yeah, we don't like that. We don't. But why don't you like it? Why don't you like healthy? Oh, yeah, because we're for ugliness. We're for, you know. And this academic, actually, in that essay, has an extremely hard time countering these really basic points that BAP is making. So I actually think that he is one of the better people at doing this sort of activity in general. Mm.
Just in terms of that, just like that, that does make me think other times that I've seen leftists being triggered. It is kind of like when you see, they often get annoyed about like seeing like a nice healthy family with like four or five kids. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like a big happy white family. So I do wonder whether, like, again, one avenue of attack isn't through rhetoric or logic or anything. It's just literally name calling and just saying how ugly they are and just holding a mirror up to their own disgusting bloated faces. And actually I think there's something just around art and culture. All we need to do is to make beautiful things and they'll hate it but they can't deny it at the same time. It's very hard to counteract it. So
yeah, I mean, but one of the interesting things that BAP brings up a lot is that he has a theory that a lot of the resentment is from women who are over the hill, basically.
Yeah.
And that a lot of feminism is about trying to like nerf younger women for their own kind of ego. And so, you know, this is also behind the rage behind an advert like this, you know, makes women in their 40s feel a bit, you know.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Yeah, very, like, totally, like, losers, basically. No, but I think more investigation needs to be done about what are those trigger points around leftists, because it's not, like, it's not like the anti of what triggers us, if that makes sense. You know,
no,
we're triggered by things like, yeah, like the pronouns on badges, but they're not bothered about no pronouns on badges, if that makes sense. It just doesn't work like that. So
yeah, they're not triggered by normal life. They're triggered by shows of like displays of beauty, healthy living. You know, they were weirdly triggered by NoFap. I remember back in the day.
Yeah, and another thing. But again, that's kind of like about self-control, though, as well. But again, like they like self-control, but only through a therapist. You know, they don't like people, you know, being able to better themselves outside of the state apparatus, I think. And then the last one here. Now this became...
oh, I've just seen what it says on this T-shirt. Right, yeah. Okay.
This was interesting because it kind of got picked up. I think it was tweeted out by someone, but then it got picked up in the press as an advertising campaign. So this was H&M with the unfortunate coupling of that specific child model and the coolest monkey in the jungle slogan. Very unfortunate. However, it then got sort of picked up by some Twitter accounts and then basically massively blew up around it and became this very controversial thing. But again, it was interesting. It was kind of like taken out of context. It wasn't like H&M had created an entire advertising campaign with this kid in it in the same kind of way. So it's kind of like, you know, it was a whole storm in a teacup over one photo taken in bad taste, let's just say. So but again, interesting that sort of left police this kind of stuff, or again can get column inches on this kind of stuff while we can't. You know, like that, you know, we often talk about like pointing out hypocrisies as meaningless, but I do think it works for their side, mainly because they've got the backing of
well, they control the system they have a jobber opposition. They're not up against me and you. They're up against Douglas Murray and various other career-long jobbers, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
And I actually agree with you that there's no actual route through the establishment media. If you get your message out through them, they then control the message, and they contain the message, or they present it in the way that they want to, which is you know, one reason why I've never had any dealings with them or any desire to, you know, be more mainstream than the stuff we do on here, because it will be more effective as a subterranean unit, if that makes any sense. Because as soon as you're talking to the system, you get co-opted by the system.
Yeah, that's true.
It's very obvious. There's no, that what I'm saying is there's no winning through that. Through that avenue, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I do feel like any kind of post whatever regime we're in now, you just can't take over the reins of power in the same kind of way and just say, oh, but it's our guy. It's like you need a total reimagining of those eight strands, if that makes sense. Because, like, hopefully I've shown with again, just some of the systems that are in place, and also the nature of a controversial campaign. There's loads of these systems are built to only head one way. So I think you'd need to rethink the entire journalistic class, personally. But that was it. That's the end.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's have a little look at some super chats before we get out of here. Colonel Crayon says, "Someone to claim us, someone to follow, someone to shame us, some brave Apollo, someone to fool us, someone like you. We want you, O Howard, O Howard." I don't know what the O Howard part is, but that's a Bowie song, of course.
Is that Howard, the Halifax guy?
Oh, right. I get it now. We want you, O Howard. Howard as Big Brother. Okay. Colonel Crayon also says, another thing on lawyers, they often fight against the state, e.g. prosecutors, regulators. Also, good lawyers cannot be overly specialized managers. They must know history, philosophy of law, etc. Yeah. Yes, interesting. Colonel, and in fact, I know Evelyn and Scrump had woes on recently, and they were talking about the importance of getting more lawyers on our side. I agree with that. Colonel Crayon says, we are not an island is also a subversion of John Donne. Yes, and in fact, the thing about being a little, what was it, a little lump of rock or whatever, is clearly a play on a speech from Richard II. You know, they're given by John of Gaunt, famous speech, this sceptred isle, this throne of royal English kings and so on. So, yeah, they're deliberately subverting the actual heritage of the country in its actual literature and history and culture. It's the eunuch. I'm having a lovely 4th of July holiday with my family and friends. But I know the gay is a great Satan and all of that, but I still love my country and my people. Happy 4th of July to everyone who cares. Happy 4th of July. We forgot to mention, by the way, Farrah, we're doing a sale today on the academic agency. If you use July 4, get you 25% off any course on the academic agency, including Foundations of Entrepreneurship. And a couple of people have taken advantage of that deal already. But you must hurry because it will end at midnight Pacific time, whatever that is. Basically, when the West Coast hits the 5th of July, the sale will end. I've put it on for our American friends. So there we go.
Buy it now.
Indeed. Let us have a look. There's quite a few here. Chris Primer says, I am a masculine presenting transgender lesbian. Tuesday, FA Tuesday. So, I mean, wasn't that Eddie Izzard's whole thing in the 90s? Before any of this, like, didn't he claim to be a male presenting lesbian? That was his whole...
I bet if you said that joke back to him now, he would, like, stab you for doing it now.
Tuesday, FA Tuesday says, get woke, go broke is a complete joke. Being woke is always better for business. Black pills for all. I'm not sure if it's better for business, Tuesday, FA Tuesday. I just think that they don't care. There's no, as Thomas Sowell would say, there's no real material feedback. And even if there is, they don't care because they're big enough that they face no consequences at all.
Just on that, I think there is certain times where it does make sense for them to go woke. So, for example, you know, that Dove commercial, you know, they had a very specific demographic, which was middle class white women. And they were trying to branch out for that, tapping into kind of new ethnic communities in England. So having those additional like a quote unquote diverse cast, and also the diverse cast of bodies, allowed them to pick up a huge audience. Like, that was one of the most successful campaigns of all time, because they were able to say, look, our audience is only this small, we can massively grow it. The problem is, it's kind of like they're always going to be reacting to things down the line. So, for example, the immigration law changes, all of a sudden Britain isn't as homogenous as it was beforehand. All of a sudden you need to change your adverts to tap into those new markets. So again, this is another a case where the kind of culture or the like advertising material is being led by the law, I think. So I do sometimes have sympathy for it. Certainly back in like 2004, they were thinking more financially, but just like you said, there are more monopolies than ever, in my opinion. And because of that, there's less risk and there's less feedback loops. And because of that, people just go with their personal ideological visions as opposed to profit-driving exercises.
Liberalism is a acid that dissolves everything that you'll ever love, and it will continue its work unchecked pretty much until the time comes to clear them out. Imagining that you can stop this from within it is trying to like go against its own logic. It's like trying to stop an avalanche when it's in the middle of the mountain, if that makes any sense. It's already got its own momentum and logic, and what I'm saying is essentially backing up the point you made earlier on, Farrow, it will take a complete reimagining of the whole system, and it will be something else. And it will take tremendous force and bloodshed. Port film, and to imagine it won't, is again away with the fairies. Port film co-op says, great guest and subject. He has his head around it. Well, thank you very much, Port Film Co-op. I agree. Pharaoh is a great guest. Qualia says, if you had to rank these professions in terms of being on your side, what would be the order, best to worst, or worst to best? Soldier, engineer, lawyer, artisan, and mechanic. I think many, I mean, it's unarguable that many soldiers are right wing.
Yeah, the squaddies are. You'd basically have to kill the officer corps. That's what
I mean, you need a purge of the officer class to win back the army. Engineers, I mean,
then the most posed, I'd say.
I mean, there are a few. I mean, engineers are logically minded, though, so you do get the occasional.
But they're also science-loving soy boys. Right, I hate to say it, like, because so much of their work is just being on a computer, just doing CAD these days, or just doing models in Python. You know, you don't actually that, because I think there's a loss of physicality in the engineering profession, which naturally, and also the kind of scientism nature of it as well. Like, it tends to pick up the kind of big scientists and peoples. I mean, I think maybe it's changing, but I think relative compared to those other groups, they're the most managerial as well.
So they're the worst,
in my opinion. Yeah,
Poe yet again owned by
fair. Relative to these. I mean, it's quite all of these people are quite naturally based. I would say anything that's like hands on, physical, that where you have to interact with people. And you're confronted with the depravities of life.
The soldier, the mechanic, the artisan, the lawyer, the engineer.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah.
I put the artisan below the mechanic because, I mean, at least around here, you can get an awful lot of pretty woke artisans making a designer kind of homebrew beers. And
yeah, it depends what you mean about artisan as well. Yeah, like does a small, like, I don't know, like a machine shop, for example, I would consider to be an artisanal practice, you know, where you have to do lathing, etc. So, and there's tons of them in the north still, loads, and they tend to be very based. But you're right, your craft beer, I mean, I've seen some actual genuine basket weaving brands and stuff like that that are very woke, so.
Kyra Skura says, what are the chances Howard was paid by Halifax to do those interviews? Hard to say.
Yeah, I think 50-50, I'd say. Yeah,
I think the chances are low personally, but that's just me. Drongo says, Halifax, I believe, is a city in England, somewhat akin to Durham. I will go to Halifax and eat Halifax pie with Lord Halifax in Halifax Cathedral.
It's also a place in Canada, isn't it? So you can do that.
Most people know Halifax is not a bank, by the way, it's a building society.
Sorry,
Enlightened Despot says, do you find the bucket list the very epitome of materialist mindset? No surprise they equate diversity with cuisine. Yes, the bucket list. It's the extremely boomer truth is the bucket list. Extremely boomer truth. Do you have a bucket list, Farah?
No, but I do. I think a better thing is when you are asking people about if you had, whatever, one day to live, what would you do? I think that's a much nicer test of things you want to do. I think the bucket list is again like what hedonistic pleasures can I achieve before my inevitable demise? And the things I'm interested in cannot be acquired in that kind of way. You know, I'm interested in.
You know, one of my favorite songs of all time is the song 24 Hours to Live by Mace.
Okay.
Where where it starts off with Puff Daddy, right? You can go and listen to this in your own time. But it just amuses me so much. Puff Daddy starts the song. I want you to ask yourself one question. If you had 24 hours to live, what would you do? That's some deep shit right there. A lot of pressure. How would you handle it? Mace, what would you do? And then listening to the answers that the various rappers give is one of my favorite. One of my favorite. I mean, do you want to hear some of the things that the rappers would do?
Sure.
Mace, for example, says, "Yo, I turn all the hoes that's heterosexual. I turn out all the hoes that's heterosexual. I'd smack conceited N-words right off the pedestal. I even look for my dad that I never knew and show him how I look in my Beretta too." So Mace has got a dad that he didn't know and he's going to track him down, but only to show off his Beretta, his gay little hat, okay?
Sad.
I do good shit, like take kids from the ghetto, show them what they could have if they never settle. I take every white kid from high class level and show them what Christmas was like growing up in the ghetto. I teach N-words how to spend, stack the rest. I'd give blunts to the N-words under massive stress. I'd give every bum on the street cash to invest and hope Harlem would blow up. That would be my last request. So that was what Mace would do, right? But then the answer of one of the members of the Lox, in my opinion, trumps it. He says, yo, if I had 24 hours to live to kick the bucket, fuck it. I'd probably eat some fried chicken and drink a Nantucket. Then I'd go and get a jar from Branson and make sure I leave my mother the money to take care of a grandson. So there we go. I just love that
that's heartwarming there.
I just love that he'd go and get a massive bucket of Kentucky fried chicken. It's just yes. Anyway, let's carry on. Maven Politics says our soap is made from dead pigs. Lush. Is that true?
I don't know. Maybe.
RCW says, always enjoy these ones. And Big Nig 420, yay, says, happy 4th of July, friends. Time to go crab fishing and light off some fireworks. So there we go. It's a big deal over in America, July the 4th. If you ask me, it was a tragedy that we unleashed the nation known as the USA upon the world. And look what the whirligig of time has reaped, Pharaoh. Mm. Look at the tragedy it has brought upon the world.
We only have ourselves to blame for
the elites of 1776 have a lot to answer for. King George, you're a corrupt fuck, and he really is to blame for so much of what has happened. Darth Kilhoon says, for the military, you will have to clear out half of the officers, half of the enlisted in non-combat MOSs. Right-wingers go almost exclusively into combat arms, like myself as an engineer soldier. Yeah, and the Marines are very, very heavily red as well, I saw, famously. Pharaoh, anything you'd like to promote before we get out of here?
No, just check out the course. It's in the description. The first two videos are free, so you can get a little taster. So I recommend just take a look and see if it's for you. Some really interesting stuff. Now's a great time to be looking to start your side hustle. Apart from that, I'm streaming regularly on something totally different on my art stream. So if you're interested in art and arty stuff, come along there.
Apparently a Beretta is not a is not a hat, but a gun.
It's a gun, yes, yeah.
So Mace wants to find his dad and show him his gun?
No, I think he wants to kill him. I think he's implying that the father that he was, that didn't bring him up, he would find revenge against him.
Oh, no! He wants to kill his old man.
Well, I mean, he wasn't there for him. So, you know, it's a tragic story.
I think Mace later found God, by the way, and turned his back on all of that, by the way.
Oh, well, I'm glad. But he's still eating fried chicken, hopefully. That's what I'm...
I thought a Beretta was a hat all these years. So that's completely changed that verse around. It's made it a lot darker, actually. Made it a lot darker. I thought he just wanted to show off his Ponzi. it's very out of character for Mace. It's very out of character for Mace, because if you listen to other Mace songs, he's like, I went from Helly Hansen to many mansions. He's always just talking about bling and stuff. He doesn't really talk about killing people. So
sad.
And speaking of the courses, just a reminder, if you use July 4th, or July 4, the code July 4, get 25% off, but it's just for today, up until midnight Pacific time. Thank you very much for coming on, Pharaoh. I'll be back tomorrow night with Unpopular Opinions. We'll be talking about the war. Yawn. We're going to be talking about Ukraine war and developments there. We're also going to be talking about the Dutch farmers' protests, which are actually gaining momentum. And they've actually been joined now, Pharaoh, by non-farmers, by many other plebeians, truckers and so on. So,
I think this is the biggest anti-regime protest in the last 10, like, I don't know. 20,
I mean,
years.
We have to give our support to the farmers, and I have to play 100%. Them a special.
Clear them out. You've got to clear them out as well. There needs to be a new start.
I mean, you know, given that the Dutch are in many ways responsible for landing us all in this mess in the first place, maybe it would be really, really interesting.
The redemption arc.
If the Dutch were the first country to, take back their nation from the clutches of international finance.
Yeah. Well, again, yeah, I don't want to talk too much, because it'll be a great episode, but lots of potential there. We need to be observing it and seeing what happens in terms of response from the regime, and also potentials for the future. So
fantastic. All right, we will see you tomorrow night. Oh, I was told by Prudentialist that he's got a special video coming out later on Independence Day. It's on the subject of July the 4th. So if you're interested in that, and you want, I'm sure, what will be a very intelligent take from Prudentialist, he'll be on later. But the most important thing of all, get out, ladies and gentlemen. Get out.
Away with you, beggar. Away with you, beggar. Away with you.